This is the Glen Allen School District 41 Board of Education regular meeting for June 24th, 2013. The time is 6:05. I call the meeting to order. Mr. Kenwood, would you please lead us when you get a chance in the Pledge of Allegiance?
My pleasure. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mrs. Stecker, roll call, please.
Mr. Escalante. Mr. Kenwood.
Here.
Mr. Alger.
Here.
Mr. Bochensky.
Here.
Mrs. Nelson.
Here.
Mr. Ellis.
Here.
Mrs. Lash.
Here. Presentation reports and initiatives. We will forego presentations this evening in order to allow time for the facilities workshop, which will occur later in the evening. Public participation.
Before we actually get started, may I take just a moment to introduce and welcome for everyone here Dr. Paul Gordon, who is not quite officially a member of the District 41 team, but in a few short days will be, and we're so glad you could make it for this evening's board meeting.
Welcome, Paul.
Thank you. Thank
glad you're here.
Pleasure.
Okay, public participation. Any members of the public present who wish to address the board? Mr. Cooper, please remember the rules, 3 minutes. Thank you. You can proceed.
I have some points that I'd like to reiterate from the end of the last meeting along with the new issue. First, on the assistant principal issue, you need to make sure that the public knows exactly what was extracted from the 2013-14 budget to pay for the new assistant principal position. And if this is going to be a zero net going forward, as we were told that the contract was for 1 year, I'm fully expecting that for every year that this assistant principal position exists, an equal dollar amount be extracted to net zero to zero net this position each year. I'll even give you a no-brainer where to cut from. I don't believe that the level of education provided by District 41 would drop if we ceased having a full-time public relations course, not one bit. The number of people that I mentioned had charged items to the district's charge card was 45. At least one of the board members should be going, It doesn't sound like the district's charge card has enough oversight. It's only at least $300,000 a year of district spending. A lot of weeds not getting attention. You, the board, need to set parameters on who and how this money is spent. And who, if anyone is actually checking the expenditures of who knows what. You know I'll be asking about each opaque charge. You might as well try to simplify this mess and give it a simpler and more transparent structure. Have each principal, the only one of each school that uses a charge card, two with the maintenance fee. Then along with the administration capping with, let's say, five people, will bring it to 17, a lot more manageable than 35. I heard at the last meeting a request by the superintendent for those planning to attend the IASB conference in November to let her know if they are attending and if they need accommodations. Having we learned from the bad publicity of last year, almost $10,000 of taxpayer money mostly spent on food and hotel costs. How about this for fiscal responsibility? Like District 304 has done, and they are further away from downtown than we are, everyone takes the Metro there and back, no $2,600 plus hotel bills. One night the attendees gather at a local District 41 restaurant, not a Three Forks, at $105 a person, $2,213 total. If you're looking for a team gathering outside of your work environment, where best than where your teammates pay their taxes?
30 seconds.
Your total expenditure will probably be cut by a third. No brainer. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Hi, I'm Sue Schoff. I'm co-president of the Glen Allen Education Association. And I just wanted to take a minute to thank Dr. Reba for her 7 years of really hard work in this district. And also, I just wanted to express appreciation for the collaborative, the open, the respectful relationship that we have had working with you for these years. And you know, we wish you well in your next adventures. and we do look forward to working with Dr. Gordon.
Thank you.
Carol McElvain.
Hi. Good to see you, everybody. I'm Carol McElvain. I am a former board member. So those of you who have just started, thank you for your service. I know full well what how much time that takes away from your families and your life in general. So I appreciate it. So thank you very much. I just want to say that 7 years ago, the reason I ran for the board was to hire a superintendent. That's the most important piece of work that a board member can do. It's the highest responsibility you have to the community. And I am really pleased to be able to say that it is the best decision that I was able to make with my fellow board members at the time hiring Ann as our superintendent 7 years ago. So I've been thrilled to watch the level of discourse in the district just raise, even if issues are contentious, they're brought together and discussed with wisdom and without rancor, really, more with really trying to do what's best for the kids of the district, all of the kids of the district. And even if things didn't necessarily always go the way I would have wanted them to, I was still really pleased all along the way that Dr. Reebok was at the helm of our work. So I just wanted to take a minute to come and say thank you for your service. And I'm really looking forward to seeing all extending that leadership to Dr. Gordon. So thank you.
Thank you.
You didn't cry.
It's good to put a name or a face with a name. So thanks for coming.
I wanted to make sure that I had an opportunity, because most of you were not in attendance at our staff recognition end of the year, as a thank you to Dr. Reebok. And I felt that it was extremely important for our community to be here, because we do know people listen to our board meetings, for them to hear the level of appreciation that we do have for Ann. So everything in life happens for a reason. We may not understand it at the time, but there is always a reason why things happen. I believe there was a reason over 7 years ago the district found itself in an unexpected search for a new superintendent. That reason was so that Dr. Ann Reebok could help move our district to a brighter future. We knew we needed a leader that our staff trusted and felt a part of shaping the direction of the district. As we started plowing through resumes, we came across one that really caught our eye, a Dr. Ann Reebok from District 113, and we knew we had to meet her. Her letters of recommendation included descriptions such as, in their book entitled Total Leaders, William Spady and Charles Schwann proposed 5 performance domains that effective leaders must possess in order to lead schools to their next level of excellence. In most cases, a leader demonstrates 2 or 3 of these domains. In extremely rare instances, a leader will possess all 5. Ann Reebok is one of those extremely rare instances. She is the textbook example of the total leader. However, the one that struck us the most is the one that still holds true for all of us today. The individual's description of Anne's value and characteristics was that of a diamond. As diamonds are associated with engagement, Anne is constantly engaged in her work and engages others easily because of her openness and her strong ability to listen. People feel they are working with Anne instead of for her. As we know, a diamond is seemingly indestructible. However, Ann's injuries this year have shown that while parts of her body may give out at times, her spirit and determination never falter. Ann's brilliance is at her best when she talks about the students. Whether this is at a board meeting, staff meeting, or in the community, her passion for kids and a learner-centered district is beyond compare. Watching her speak to a group, and usually it is without a single note card, It is like watching a master at their craft. It's just amazing to watch her. And Anne, like a diamond, has the capacity to soak up white light and to break it apart like a prism, dispersing it into a rainbow of colors. She has an incredible capacity to take the white light, her issue at hand, break it apart through her collaborative analysis. And what is created is an outcome as beautiful and hopeful as the rainbow. Now, like a diamond, we can measure the value of Anne in the four C's: conviction, courage, collaboration, and caring. Finally, this letter stated it best when this individual described the following. She said, one of the most famous diamonds is on display at the Smithsonian Institute, the Hope Diamond. Anne Reebok will become a district's Hope Diamond. While 7 years ago, the reason was not clear, it is very clear to us today. Anne Reebok, our Hope Diamond, came to us to create a place where people are valued, students come first, and we as a district can shine brightly together. Thank you, Anne, for sharing your brilliance with all of us.
Thank you, Mrs. Howard. Anyone else?
This is good.
Okay. Okay. Action items. Consent agenda. Are there any items board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the reports and recommendations contained in the consent agenda, which includes the human resources report. Human resources, including the personnel report, employment recommendations, dismissals, resignations, finance, facilities, and operations, including the treasurer's report, investment schedule, monthly revenue expenditure summary report, summary of bills and payroll, school district payment order, vandalism damage report, disposal of surplus property, 2012-2013 employee report, and other matters, including the approval of board meeting minutes for the June 10th, 2013 regular board meeting and the June 10th, 2013 Board of Education closed session minutes. May I have a motion?
Motion.
Second. Motion by Mr. Ellis. Second by Mrs. Nelson. Nelson. excuse me. Roll call, please.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Alter?
Yes.
Yes. Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Glass?
Yes. Superintendent's recommendations. At its June 10th meeting, the board discussed the following recommendations. Approval of a resolution to adopt CPI Qualified Plan Consultants Incorporated as the plan administrator and remitter for the district's current 457B retirement plan. May I have a motion to approve the recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Ellis. Second by Mr. Buchensky. Roll call, please.
No, discussion.
Oh, sorry, discussion. Any discussion?
Yeah, we've talked about this. It's a straightforward.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Alter?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Buchensky?
Yes.
Mr. Kenley?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes. Intergovernmental agreement with Marquardt School District 15 Food Services. The approval of the amended intergovernmental agreement with Marquardt School District 15 Food Services to provide breakfast at Churchill School. May I have a motion to approve the recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Elger, second by Mr. Ellis. Any discussion? Again, we discussed this at length at the last meeting. Okay. Roll call, please, Mrs. Tucker.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mr. Buchensky?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes. Supplemental pay recommendation. Approval of changes to the Hadley extracurricular program recommended by the district supplemental pay committee. The committee is recommending approval of supplemental pay for the Safe Spot Club, which provides an accepting and safe environment for diverse students. Approval of various changes related to music activities and eliminating the elementary science coordinator position as these functions will be centralized. Overall, these changes mean a cost reduction of $6,900. May I have a motion to approve the recommendation as presented?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Mrs. Nelson, second by Mr. Ellis. Any discussion? Again, we've discussed this at length at the last meeting. Roll call, please, Mrs. Tucker.
Mr. Pachetsky?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Fenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Alter?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes. 2014 tentative budget. Approval of the resolution notifying the public of the August 12th public hearing and placement of the tentative budget on display. May I have a motion to approve the recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Ellis, second by Mr. Elger. Any discussion?
I had sent a quick question to Bob around the 5% reduction that you had built in, Bob, around general state aid. Mm-hmm. And my question was, do you expect it might change again? That's an unfair question because we know it's like this. But I wanted to know kind of the sense of risk that we had in general state aid. So Bob said that you're thinking it might be reduced by another 5% again, right? But you didn't want to make the change without further
I'll make the change as information becomes available between now and when we move to approve the budget in August.
Yeah. It just reminds me a little bit about how we kind of went lower so that we would be in a better position. So I was, I know there's a reality check to be made with this too. But thank you.
Can I jump in there?
Yeah.
And the 5% translates into what dollar?
$55,000.
Yes.
Okay. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that was good. No, I'm glad you did that. And then, actually, I thought you were going to pick up on the next piece, which I think Mr. Cooper has left, but that was his one of his points that he made in public participation, and it was around Bob identifying that amount of money in order to offset the full-time assistant principal. So that's at $100,000. So that money's been identified.
Yes.
And then you made a net change to the budget of $10,000.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Actually, two changes. Approximately $55,000 reduction in revenue, and then I pulled back $10,000 in salaries. As I explained to Joe earlier, actually over the weekend, we carry $100,000 in unassigned salaries. So all we did was reposition those dollars. The net gain is $10,000 from where we were at originally.
Any other questions, discussion? Mrs. Decker, roll call, please.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Pachetsky?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes. Request for one additional math specialist, STEAM specialist. Approval to restore one additional math/STEAM, which is science, technology, engineering, the arts, and math specialist at a cost of approximately $67,000. The administration proposes a full-time math STEAM specialist at Abraham Lincoln and at Churchill, which have a greater number of struggling students. Both those schools apparently have a greater number of struggling students. And a shared specialist for Benjamin Franklin and Forest Glen schools. May I have a motion to approve the recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Kenwood, second by Mr. Pachetsky. Any discussion?
Well, I would just support this and speak just briefly at the Team 21 meetings that are being held over the summer. I think I mentioned when this first came to the board that one of the comments made by a few of the teachers when we were looking at PLC meeting time, which was bringing in specialists in some of those meetings, that having that extra person will make a big difference because math is being compacted. Is that the word we're using? And so next year especially, having that coach to be able to work not only with the teachers but also that in the STEM opportunity will be helpful. So from the teachers, via that conversation, I just want to put that back on the table. That's important to them.
Any other questions, discussion? I thought this was a great idea last meeting, and I still feel the same way. So, Mrs. Stecker, roll call, please.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Pachetsky?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mrs. Black?
Yes. Superintendent's report.
One quick thing, and that is that the dates that Paul and I looked at for having the superintendent board workshop are not going to work. One of you has let us know that you can't make it on the 26th, and the 18th, as it turns out, is going to be a joint board meeting with all the Glenbard Associate Districts. So we're going to have to go back to the drawing board with the IASB and look for some other dates, which when Paul and I meet later this week, we'll give a call and see if we can get some other dates to reserve for you.
So should we be holding September 18th for a joint?
Hold September 8th for a joint board meeting with all of the Lombard Associates. And that will be an update on all of the programs that we share jointly, as well as the work that GCC has been doing in the Common Core. And then finally, I'll just make it very brief, and I don't want to be accused, as John said, of being emotional. And I wish Tara and Carol were still here. But I also want to say that 7 years ago was a great opportunity for me, and it's been a great 7 years in this district with so many talented people and so many caring people. And while they talked about focus first on children, I don't think that was something that that I can take credit for, because I think that's something that is simply emblematic of this district and of the people who are here, both within the community and within our classrooms. And it's been, you've heard me say this many, many times to you, those of you who have been on the board for a while, it's an honor and has been an honor for me to serve here. And so I say thank you for the great opportunity, and I know you're in great hands with Paul, and I'm going to look forward to following all the things that happen in the next several years. And as I've said, I think this district is poised to be a premier district, both in the state of Illinois and the nation, and that's because of all of the things that I've just said. So thank you for the great honor, and good luck in the future.
Are you going to attend board meetings from that side now?
Maybe.
I hope so.
I'm just going to listen to the tape.
Okay, board reports. Any board committee reports?
I have two quick ones. Hopefully quick, but the second one. Team 21, I just wanted to give an update. We met last week, the 18th, 19th, and 20th, 8:30 to 12:30 each of those days. And as I mentioned last week, or the 10th rather, of June at our meeting, the focus, it takes a different view on each of these kind of segments. This happened to be around determining how 21st century learning will be evaluated. And so we spent those 3 days really identifying those areas of evaluation, especially going back to parent requests early on in the conversation and the kind of priorities that they set around certainly social emotional learning. And the impact of that, transitions, logistics, certainly student achievement as key areas. But we ended up with, Karen, I just identified tens of areas and then broke those down to prioritize them. So a lot of really great work and looking at the analysis piece. So wanting to make sure that voices were heard from the parents' perspective, but also that the teachers did a lot of hard work around answering a very important question, and that is, what are we evaluating and why, and how can we do that to make sure that we're facing it in and appropriately evaluating it depending on where it's coming, so in the rollout in the fall. So I wanted to mention that briefly. The other thing we've talked significantly about, and I know this came up in a lot of the think tank conversations, and that was around just the change management aspect of what we're doing and the reality of just the movement toward any kind of systemic change. And so the group did had a lot of good conversation around that piece as well. I know that Amy's here, who's one of the parent members, and I know one of the days I was able to be there, and you were on another day that I wasn't able to be there, but also Kathy Meyer, who's another parent rep, gave some really good insight to that as well. So I just want to put on the record that these concerns are on the table, and we're making sure we're paying due diligence to looking at those pieces, and we'll continue our meetings. There's a meeting tomorrow, and we have the 25th, 26th, and 27th this week, and then the 29th and 30th. Or 31st, rather, we added the 30th and an August 2nd meeting as well. So these conversations will continue, and a lot of really concrete work so that we're ready to plug in the fall. That's a good work. The other thing I want to distribute to you is a follow-on from the June 10th meeting where I had asked your, and there's copies for everybody, Maureen, I have a copy of this for you as well. This is the IASB resolution for the convention around looking at getting, and there's the two sides to this, the front and the back. So what I'm giving you is the second draft that I worked with Kristen Fitzgerald, who's a board member in District 203, who wants to co-sponsor this resolution, and then Deanna Sullivan, who is the in the legal office for IASB and helps with kind of the resolutions format. So thank you, John. So what you have in front of you is the overview, which hasn't changed significantly. We did some wordsmithing to not have it look so, I will say the word negative, because part of this resolution to the Resolutions Committee is engaging the legislators and wanting to be a part of this. But the key to this, if you turn it on to the back, is this piece that starts with now therefore, which is at the end of the resolution. So I'll just read this for air. Be it resolved by the Board of Education of Glen Allen District 41 and Naperville District 203 that the Illinois Association of School Boards shall support modifications to the Illinois State Mandates Act, which is already in place, that will strengthen the ability of the Illinois State Board of Education to accurately and sufficiently provide timely information on the cost of mandates, including input from local elected boards of education. In addition, the mandates report required for other local governments shall be required of ISBE to provide timely, updated information on the impact of new mandates as they are enacted. So the gist of this, to go to the Resolutions Committee with this board's support, is to already take the Mandates Act, which is in place, and make them do it. If I can just break this down, which is impact notes that are both that are financial in nature, so that boards of education like us can have more time injected into the process, so we can say when XYZ bill is being presented as a mandate that's not funded, this is the potential impact on our budget, et cetera. And even probably as importantly, the rigor we have in the classrooms now and what mandates, unfunded or underfunded, can do to pull time away from academics. So I'm looking for your support. This now has to go to the Resolutions Committee. It's not a done deal. But I think it speaks to something that this board has talked about on and off for the last few years, and the frustration with state legislators who do care and, you know, certainly are looking to, you know, put bills in place that are around safety measures or training. And, you know, we acknowledge that. But these last several years, especially around the conversations around pension reform, et cetera, have made it more difficult. I will say that the timing on this is probably also quite good because we all got the update from Lend, and one of the new joint resolutions that came out was actually from a freshman senator who spoke specifically about Illinois ranking 50th in terms of state proportion of kindergarten through grade 12 funding and wanting to, again, get this on the table and try to do something about it. So I feel like this resolution that he's put forward aligns in our conversations over these last few years with mandates and how frustrating that can be. And certainly our district doesn't feel it as hard as others, but we do, and school boards, local boards of education can have a voice in pushing, you know, back on some of this. So I'm seeking your support to get this typed up and then bring it to Sam for signature and Dean for signature, and then send it to the Resolutions Committee and see where it goes.
What's the time frame?
Well, we've kind of missed the date because it's mid-June, but we've been told we can, you know, let you have some, you know, time to think about this, and then if I can get this in July to IASB, then the Resolutions Committee will look at it in July and August, and then they have to decide what's going to move forward for the convention.
So if we could either give it a yay or nay by
well,
a
July
week, 2 weeks?
Yeah, I was going to say, if you could by July 1st, and I'm out of town for 10 days, and I can you know, get this to you guys for signature and then send it over to our rep, Terry Fielder.
Now, can we do that by email, or do we need to make a board action?
Yeah, I mean, no, there would be no board action required to support a resolution that goes to IASB because it doesn't have any, official, it's a recommending body.
Right.
It's not a,
is there anybody that needs more information now, I guess? We could ask that.
I do. I haven't seen it. I want to read it and make sure about it.
It's almost verbatim from the first draft I gave you, but that last therefore was what we framed this morning so that we could say, and this is what we're looking to resolve. So, if you could do that, that would be great, and then I'll get this sent in.
So we'll do a yay or nay to me or to Erica?
You can do it through Sam, and then you can let me know.
And then you can...
Yeah, and then I have a resolution form that I'll run over to your house to get signed and deeds, and then I'll send it in.
Very ambitious.
Or I'll drive over. Let me rethink that.
Okay.
So thank you.
Nice work on that, Erica.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Any other reports? I have some reflections about Ann that Julie helped me prepare. And I also just have some very brief personal comments. So I'd like to read these, and then if any other members have any comments, then now would be the time to share them. And then I'll share my own. Okay, Ann Rybak's first day as our superintendent was Friday, June 30th, 2006. Is that correct? 2 days later, on Sunday, July 2nd, she facilitated her first board workshop. There was only one topic on the agenda for that five-hour meeting. Entry work plan for the superintendent, long and short-range planning. So that was a fun first meeting, I expect. Since that day, Dr. Rybak has had only one speed, flat out. Even so, where others might be breathless, struggling, or stressed out, Anne meets the demanding work expectations with grace. Somehow, she finds the time to smile and laugh, to meet today's deadlines and strategize for the future, to remember birthdays and celebrate milestones, that's absolutely true. To patiently conference with board members, that's also true. And employees, to garden and to babysit her five grandchildren, and maybe more in the future. During her 7 years with District 41, she has led a wide range of initiatives and projects, providing inspiration, leadership, and direction. With a hands-on approach, Dr. Rybak got right in the trenches, working shoulder to shoulder with her administration. Some of these projects include the Vision Project, that is the foundation for our long-range plan, development of the District 41 learner characteristics, the 2007 referendum campaign, boundary study, bully prevention work, technology initiatives, facility improvements, Hadley New Horizons, curricular implementations in literacy, math, foreign language, and 21st century learning, parent involvement initiatives, benchmarking study, and numerous other efforts, which is quite an achievement, I would say. Some of her work has been largely invisible to the public, but has made the district a great place to work and created an environment where talent can shine. She has always seen District 41 as a leader in education and helped us see that vision as well. Some of the words and phrases used to describe her by those who know her best include dedicated, child-centered, gracious, intelligent, sensitive, brave, tireless, creative, family-oriented, and witty.
Witty.
I put that one in.
The
fundamentally, Dr. Rybak Ann is a teacher. We have learned much from her and know that her influence and accomplishments will remain here long after she has left us. Now, we have to learn to let go so that we can say goodbye. In that, as in so much else, she is our leader and our teacher, showing us how to part with grace. We watch her go with admiration and with great appreciation. So, thank you.
Thank you, Sam.
Let me just add, I will also like to add that in my dealings with Anne, she's been patient, persistent, personal, accommodating, and effective. Her knowledge of all things D41 is exceptional. I underline exceptional, and will be greatly missed. And I think missed more than we can imagine. So, again, thank you. Anyone else have anything they'd like to say?
I'll go next. My tenure with Anne has been very short since he's joined the board. But I do appreciate her leadership throughout the couple of months that I've been involved. I guess it's been a little more than a couple of months.
You've been around for a little more?
That was a pre-education.
But you've been a tremendous assistance to get me up to speed as quickly as I wanted to, and I appreciate that. As a parent of a district student, I do want to thank you for your commitment. 7 years, you've done more than 7 years of work in 7 years. You can see the results out in the district and your efforts to bring 21st century learning to our classrooms. It's obvious because it's there and it will continue. So thank you for setting a strong foundation.
Thank you, Joe.
Yes, I can go. You got to bear with me. So, you know, I met Ann Reebok the first time in 07. And I don't know if Ann remembers that, but it was a meeting for families and neighbors that would be affected by the proposed referendum. Mm-hmm. And I remember I asked you two questions, and one of them I asked you about a population study, and my other question that I asked you was, how hard were the numbers that related to the costs of the proposed building subject to the referendum? My initial response was that Anne is tremendously polished, knows her numbers, and commands her role. I was very impressed, and I would tell you that that's probably one of the reasons that I said, you know, I'm going to run for the board. And 3 years or 2 years later, I made the decision to run. I put my petitions together, and I got a kind of a one-to-one meeting with Ann before I was elected. And I think Ann, that was, you wanted to see kind of what my motivation was, why I wanted to run, and again I was impressed. I was very impressed in terms of your caring to try and understand and why, you know. And I ended up on the board. I remember my first Triple I conference, and you know, being the new guy on the board, and a number of you guys can appreciate that. You don't have a basis to understand what the baseline of how things are done. And so I figured what Ann does, how Ann handles things. It's like, well, this is how all superintendents are. I mean, this is part of that bigger, higher level of education that, you know, I was still trying to understand. And at the Triple I conference, I realized that not all superintendents are like Ann. And it was kind of an eye opener for me, but it gave me a sense of, you know, what Anne's abilities and depth in terms of the things she's done. And I'm not going to talk about the big things that Ann Reebok has done, because all of that we would expect that from any superintendent. Any superintendent, we would expect that all the big things were done well and efficiently and to the board's level of expectation. And Ann has done that has exceeded those expectations. But it's not the big things. It's the little things. It's all the little pieces that Ann has done. And you know, the way Ann handles the board, the the herding of the calves. It's all the little things, all the very subtle things that Ann does with, from the board perspective, seems effortless. And it was just, it was so easy to do, because this is what you see. But what you don't see is the hard work and the dedication to put that all together to make it so effortless for the board. And I can't thank you enough for my 4 years on the board. When I realized how lucky we were to have you as our superintendent, it made my 4 years really, really special. And I will miss you tremendously. But I hope you come back, because you will be great for us.
Thanks, Drew. I can step in for a minute. I've only been on the board also since April, so this is kind of new to me. I've been coming to meetings and
seeing
how this all works since August. So it's been much shorter than everybody else. But I speak more as a parent from someone in District 41, because you were at the helm for most of the time that my son was coming through District 41, and now he's at Glenbard West. And I think what you've done and your staff has done through your leadership has put us in this position, like what Drew just mentioned, where when I go to other things, people are sort of like, well, you're very lucky to be at District 41. And having other people tell you you're lucky to be able to work with the superintendent and the staff that she's put together, And that's a very rewarding thing as a new board member, to find out that people, because other people at these meetings are being told, wow, you really got your hands full. And, you know, we get the positive stuff. And that's because of your leadership and because of what you've done, not only in your position, but the way you lead the rest of the team. And it's what happens with the staff, the teachers all working with you in this. And I can't thank you enough, because, like I said, as a parent, that's a lot more important to me than anything I would do as a board member. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Dean.
I have a couple of things I need to grab real quick.
You want to go down while Erica is?
For any of us that has worked in an organization for a long time, it's hard to understand the relationship that one has with the leader unless you work with that person in the trenches. I think it's very difficult in organizations if you don't have the behind-the-scenes understanding, in some ways, what Drew was saying, the kind of the seamlessness of the organization. Anne has led the district under the responsibility of building that long-range plan when she first came here. John was on that board. And Carol McElvain, who was here earlier, and Tara Howard. And the challenge in that five-hour session, marathon session, was where do we go? As a 17-year resident and two children through the district, to see the change from when I started and my children's academic experience through when my daughter, 5 years ahead of my son, and my son, 5 years behind, had a very different experience through the end of elementary and then through Hadley, I can attest that behind-the-scenes work is what Dean was referring to also, which was the grind and moving and often challenging ship through a lot of headwater. And that's not going to change, Paul. I think that's a part of every... What is that? That's a part of every large organization that has really committed people, really committed parents, engaged voices, and we've talked a lot about that as a district. We would rather that than not. So, you know, we look forward to that as well. But I think it's really hard for people to understand the depth of relationship when you're not in that relationship day to day. It's difficult for board members to understand that from a staff perspective. It's difficult for community members to understand that from a board perspective. And certainly it's difficult for us to recognize that in between those lines. So we tried to find something that would capture some of the 7 years, which is very difficult to do. Sam, thank you for your eloquence in leading us off with those comments. But we need two signatures, Drew and Patrick, on this. And we did find a quote that's not labeled, but I think it probably describes much of what we've been doing here for the last 7 years. We've been breathing. We've been trying new things. We've been keeping calm. We've been carrying on, moving forward, and we've been laughing out loud a lot for many, many good reasons. So you can put this up in your office and remember how much you brought to the district, and we thank you for that. So you can sign that at the end. And when Patrick gets here, and Patrick is stuck on a metro train, by the way, so I know that he's probably frustrated. And yes, some more flowers.
Thank you.
For you to have. On a personal note, along with what else everybody has said, there are many, 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 many conversations that one has with their board colleagues, just like we do in organizations, and certainly with the leader of the district. And for me, my 2 years as board president will remain probably one of my best experiences, and in part because I was able to have a deeper dive, learn and better understand the work of the district, build greater understanding with teachers and staff members, and certainly through the lens that the superintendent provides as well. Always challenging and allowing me to challenge, and I appreciate that. You will be missed. Thank you.
Thanks, sir. Mm-hmm. What I think of?
I must have missed the email. Are you retiring?
You're the one who kept telling me I was old.
I didn't really have too many prepared statements, but as I reflect back on the years, you know, I reflect back to the late 90s when this district, at least I felt, was very closed, not much discussion, just a very different culture of, you know, going down a path, and I felt that a change was needed, and that's when we got, you know, another superintendent, and I thought that he started to change that culture, and he started to bring about some processes and some new things that opened up the district, maybe not with the speed. You know, speed is always one of my big things that I would have liked, or necessarily with some of the rigor and discipline that needed to be around it. And I remember when we interviewed you, I remember I asked you the speed question. I painted a scenario of something. It was at a time when we were launching an evaluation system, and we were going to do it over 3 years, and a certain number of teachers were going to do it year one, year two, year three, and you know, I looked at you and said, we got 90,000 people in my company, and we launch a new evaluation system. We do it in 2 months, and it's done, and everybody's on board. And we started talking about some other things, and you started giving some ideas on how we could do things faster, and that was always important to me. And while it's never fast enough, I appreciated your effort during the years. I can't imagine, you know, when you stepped in and took over from the two previous administrations, I think there were a lot of things that probably weren't in order, especially around the curriculum. And you brought in some help there and really addressed some of our core issues that needed to be addressed. And I felt that transition from one administration to the next, it was the perfect fit, and appreciate everything you've done about that. Sometimes we disagreed. You've been patient with me, which is difficult, I know.
And likewise.
I apologize for some of the grief that I've caused you in some of my sentiments. I think, you know, I could go on about you and you know, everything you've brought to the table, but past 9 months have been a little rough, and I think when I reflect on the greatest compliment of all, is that no matter what the times were, there were so many people that stood up and said they love the teachers and the district and what we're doing. And to me, that's the best compliment that anyone can pay you, is the fact that even in these heated times and these discussions that we've had, a lot of people stood up and gave a lot of praise to the district and everything the district's done. So I think that's the best compliment that anyone could pay you. And I think that was reflective of what we heard from people. So thank you.
Thanks, John. Patrick has joined us. We'll put you on the spot.
Motion.
Second.
I'm glad you made it.
We're just reflecting on Ann a little bit. And I know that you're just sat down. So if you want a minute to...
I'll reiterate things that have already been said by Joe and Dean. This is a learning experience, and, you know, for myself, being on the school board, and one of the things about learning is you always hope that you have somebody who's either a mentor or a great teacher, and I think you've been real helpful for me, really appreciating all the work that goes into administration of the school board, the teachers and the staff to myself and the board. I probably can't more eloquently iterate a lot of the conversations that's probably been said or read, but personally, the help that I got from the team through your direction and your leadership has gotten me on a lot firmer footing than when I walked in the door on the election day. So I appreciate all the help that you've given me, all the quick responses that you've given me in the short time we've been here. I hope that we can take the legacy that you've kind of set and solidified over the last few years and move it forward. With that foundation and with that direction, I think we have a lot of good opportunities to take some of your leadership skills and take them into the next, personally 4 years and maybe hopefully longer, depending what the community says, but I appreciate all the help that you've given me. I only hope that the new superintendent understands and appreciates all the hard work that you do, because there are going to be big shoes to fill. So a lot of questions, but a lot of answers. So thank you very much for all the help that you've given me personally. Thank you.
Thanks, Patrick.
Well, I think obviously, I'm touched. I'm especially touched by this, not only because I think of it in terms of where we've come, but I think about it in terms of what it means to me as I retire.
How many years in professionally?
39. Somebody said to me today, why didn't you just make it an even 40? And I said, because I either had to have my age be an odd number or my years of service be an odd number, so I chose my years of service to be an odd number. But this will characterize that next journey as well as the journey prior to it. And while I think you've given me far more credit than I deserve as an individual, because as I look out here in the team that I have worked with and been blessed to be able to work with for 7 years, they are the leadership team, and they make things happen in this district, and no doubt will continue to do so, and always work to a level of excellence that you can count on, and share that same commitment to kids and to children every day. And that's something that we will never waver on. They will never waver on. And that's the guarantee that you want. So thank you for more compliments than I'm comfortable with. And I will take them with me for the next 39 years so that I don't forget. But thank you, everyone.
Okay. We do have some more, unfortunately.
We have some business to do now.
Discussion items. There are no items on schedule for discussion this evening. Upcoming meetings. August 12, 2013, public hearing and Board of Education regular meeting, 7:15 p.m., Central Services Office. August 26, 2013, Board of Education regular meeting, 7:30 p.m., Central Services Office. Are there any other board business?
Oh, yes, I have one item very quickly. As you know, we have a parent in the community who has been interested in an exception to our early entrance waiver that we have, and the early entrance waiver and policy would allow a student who doesn't turn five before September 1st to enroll as long as their birthday goes until September 30th. A parent has a child whose birthday is in October who wants an exception to that waiver, and we have, through the kind of the chain of command, told her no, that the policy would need to be revised in order for us to accommodate that. And I'm looking for, you know, I've heard from a couple of you on follow the policy. If we wish to change the policy, you may bring that back to policy to change. But at this time, September 30th is the date for the exception. And our recommendation would be not to change that unless you change it through policy, because otherwise we will have a very difficult time keeping some level of deadline on that. So that's what I have communicated. If you affirm that, then I would communicate to this parent that the board also affirms that. I'm seeing nods.
I support it.
Yeah, I think I might have been the one of the ones who mentioned that, but I'm very comfortable with the policy as it's written.
Okay.
But as you know, I think...
Differently.
Yes. I mean, you know, we often say that education starts at the home and the parents know their kids best, and I think if these parents feel their kid is ready and if there's some test they take and they pass it, I don't see a problem with it, but I'm only one, so I wouldn't want parents to do that out of convenience and the child's not ready, right? Mm-hmm. So if the child takes whatever it is they're supposed to take and they pass and the parents feel it's okay, I don't see a problem with it, but I know.
I would simply recommend that if you're going to do that, you do it through policy and make your policy specific to that.
Right, I mean, there are steps in the policy, the way I understand it, that it's
testing.
A 30-day window, and there's also testing within that 30-day exception. So there's testing in place and the 30-day exception is in place.
Right.
So if we wanted to change it, we would have to change our policy to include more testing.
And again, you guys know me. I'm like, okay, let's make the exception and we'll adjust the policy over the summer and make it work. I mean, some kids, we all know the kids in our schools that were just so far ahead of everybody, and it was like they were ready, you know. And I just happen to be a product of that in my family, and, you know, it's worked out great, you know. Just my opinion.
And I'll communicate to her that there was one member of the board that had a different perspective. Okay, thank you. That was the only other.
Okay, public participation. Are there any members of the public who wish to address the board at this time? Mrs. Tucker-Nolan? Okay. Do we have any people?
Then we should move to Master Facilities.
Master Facilities presentation and workshop.
Okay. I'm going to distribute some documents to the board, and we have some available for the community as well. And in the PowerPoint. You know what, Dean, I should split that up between both sides.
Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I realize that was kind of like this. So this one, this right, this one, this right. There's the other one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the other one's the other way. Are these the ones that got took down that way?
Oh, now you're.
I never made it there.
I'm sorry.
So, Phillips, are there any pen issues on these?
No.
No, just sign it, whatever.
Fine.
Okay, thank you.
I'm sorry, Pat.
Okay, Ron Richardson, our architect with FGM, and I are going to do this presentation this evening, and at the request of the board, this is really an overview, historical perspective on where we've been with our facilities since about 2004. I will tell you that in the presentation, I'm going to spend much less time on the 2004 to 2009 time frame, simply because that's, you know, that's pretty old history. But I will, in the context of talking from 2009 to the present, talk a little bit about that history and how that all folds into the presentation this evening. And then we'll talk a little bit about the work that we did from the 2009 master facilities planning to the current state of affairs. And remember that the current state of affairs included looking at land acquisition and the new junior high. So you'll really see kind of two iterations of our current planning, one that includes that thinking, a new junior high, and the other that would look at a different approach. So, we'll go ahead and show the table of contents. What we're hoping to do this evening is, you know, talk a little bit about 21st century learning. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. Talk about our planning objective, and then take you back in history a little bit to the 2004 work that was done that led to the 2007 referendum, and then following the 2007 referendum, the 2009 master facilities plan. Then we'll talk about the short-term planning solution that we had for the district here now, then a longer-term planning, which Ron will present to you, and kind of run through some of that current thinking. Our objective in this is to simply provide background, both for new board members and for Paul, as he gets ready to look at facilities, the never-ending conversation about facilities. But it really is not to open up the conversation at this point to discuss options and what next steps would occur. That's really your conversation to have with Paul in the months to come. This is just a set context and groundwork for what has been.
And if I could just interject,
sure,
at this point.
And at any point, feel free to interject.
So I was just going to say that when you and I discussed it, it was more of a give and take question answer than a discussion and wait for questions at the end of the presentation.
That's right. Feel free to interrupt or add comments. I mean, John obviously was a part of the 2009 Master Facilities Planning Committee and may have perspectives that I don't remember to add. And at any point in time you have a question or a comment, feel free to interrupt this presentation. It's not one of those. You've heard lots, and we really began talking several years ago about 21st century learning and what 21st century learning might look like and what it needs to be. I produced lots of documents at that time for the board, both in terms of what the facilities look like, what facilities should do to foster the educational plan. And this is just a quick summary of some of the things that have been drivers for us over the last couple of years. One is that idea of flexible spaces so that we have the ability to change the learning environment based on the needs that we might have. And when we talked about the 2009 referendum, we really were talking about how do you plan an educational facility where you really don't know what the future of education will bring and that will take us 50 years down the road. So that conversation has helped to frame the context around what we've been talking about. We believe that there's a need for lab spaces, larger meeting areas where students can gather for either projects or for large presentations, as well as having those small group collaborative spaces. We think that a single lunch period, in order to accommodate a schedule that is going to be better for kids, that we can move ourselves to a single lunch period, which obviously has a facilities implication. And then finally, full-day kindergarten and early childhood program. We moved to a blended early childhood program about 4 years ago here. 4 years ago. Next year will be our fourth year. And that blended program brings our typically developing pre-K students, our high-risk pre-K students, and our special needs students together in a single classroom learning environment. And for the most part, reflects best practices in early childhood education. We've had really positive results from that, and that's something certainly we want to continue in the future and have a full-blown early childhood program. Full-day kindergarten. That has been something that we've wanted to have deeper discussions about for several years from an educational standpoint, but frankly, we simply don't have the facilities to accommodate a full-day kindergarten should we want it. So that's something that when we start talking about facilities long-term, you really have to, whether you decide to go to full-day kindergarten or not, you really need to make sure that that conversation is a part of the larger conversation.
And the important takeaway then, too, is that actually increases your capacity requirements at each site, obviously. I mean, right. That's a space issue. You're not relieving anything, you're increasing the population, so to speak.
So when we look at this list, this is back in 2009, right? That this was put together?
Is current.
This is more current.
Okay.
Although we did talk about full-day kindergarten as, you know, something to put into the consideration. We talked about large group spaces. We talked about flexible spaces in the 2009 master facilities. We've begun to talk more about the lab, the STEAM, and the literacy as it has come out of the work more recently in 2011 and 12.
So needless to say, it hasn't gotten any better since we started this, is the point. A lot of these things we were anticipating back in 2009 when we were probably on this are starting to come to fruition now. It's just that we're 4 years later.
Okay. There's just an article in the paper, too. You might have seen it, that Naperville 203 is launching 7 out of their 14 elementaries with full-day kindergarten, and they're focusing them on their most high-risk population. So this idea of, you know, doing that full day, especially with this increased rigor, so they made the call at their board meeting the other night. It was a unanimous vote. So we know that there's pockets around our area that are going there, and they were hedging some of it. I think they did a pilot, and they just decided we're moving in that direction.
More and more districts that can accommodate full-day kindergarten will move in that direction as the Common Core full implementation of that and the expectations that are associated with that districts may find that that's how they need to meet the needs of their children and their readiness.
And right back to the one at the top, the flexible spaces accommodate.
Mm-hmm.
If I recall, that's really born out of a concepts,
integrated resources,
which is still very much in the forefront of this.
It is, in a lot of ways. We've probably defined integrated resources now a little differently as we've looked at content specialization and as we've looked at developing lab experiences for students. But when you look at small and large group spaces, the integrated resource was really the opportunity to be able to have children in smaller groups but still in a supervised environment so that they weren't pulled out of classrooms for services, but the services, everything took place within the classroom. And when we looked at that originally, the integrated resources, we actually did look at a collection of 4 classrooms, and students would move from classroom to classroom to classroom depending on the class they were taking. And we didn't pursue that at that time, but as you can see, you know, to some extent, we're looking at that now in a slightly different configuration, but with content specialization and greater integration.
Yeah, I guess what I would add to this list that may be more reflective of earlier times was class sizes. We had, you know, as a board, set some targets, which drove space needs. So that was done.
That was done in 2002.
Yeah, that was done based on, you know, curriculum. Special ed also was a driver. You know, we had kids getting their physical therapy on stages. So special ed was another one, and there was an increase in special ed, which drove, you know, some of our thoughts around space. And then really just the method of differentiation in the classroom, I think, also was a driver of number of kids and space and things like that. So those are some things that may not exactly be totally curriculum, but I think they drove a little bit of, you know, what we were thinking in 2002-04.
Yeah, in 2004, that definitely was a big driver out of the task force in that time was looking at spaces for programs. And that, you know, we've evolved a little bit on that in terms of the integrated resource idea and making sure that kids are getting service, if at all possible, within their classrooms. But that was, you know, do you have the facilities to house the programs that you need? And increasingly, beginning back in the early 2000s, the district was saying, we do not. Increased number of programs and increased number of opportunities that the board wanted to offer to students.
And back in, you know, 2003 or 4 or 5, I forget, but the state had some funds that were associated with new construction that they would provide districts if they met certain criteria. We were on that list. I think we were in the top 10, if not maybe even the top 5.
2005 list.
Yeah, we were. I think we were at least in the top 10 of schools that were due funding because of our circumstances with portables and things like that. And then that whole program got killed. And
it's still
moving, believe it or not.
Huh?
It's still moving.
Is that the problem where Winfield finally got there?
Yes.
Yeah. So I shouldn't say it was killed, but it was obvious we were never going to get anything.
Well, they're on the 03 cycle. We've actually built several new schools on the 03. They're looking at the 04, and then they're queued up 05.
So it was obvious back in 04, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, we were not going to get any money.
Nothing. But we are still there. And the other thing is you can't...
What is our ranking now?
You have to have a successful referendum. You have to have already passed the referendum in order to be eligible for that money. And so,
that's right.
You know, that's one of the tricky pieces. I don't know where we are on the list now.
Just to underscore that, I know we've got a lot of data here tonight, but we've actually done some preliminary analysis of the matching grant from the state DCB, and that's actually in the document. We've put some numbers together based on these concepts. But as far as that goes, what they'll do is they'll when they move into the next year, they'll sort through those lists because they're so old that some of the districts may not need the money anymore.
Right. That's what I remember. The list moved.
Right. So what they'll do is when the money is appropriated, at least they which we know is a big mess right now, but if and when that comes forward, because the state really wants the jobs. They want the construction jobs out of that component. So once they start moving on the 05 list, they'll contact the district.
So is there, I mean,
and then they'll
I don't know if this is important or not, but if there's a 10-year lag and we were on the 2005 list, is there a possibility that money will come our way?
Like I said, they're funding the 03, they're looking at the 04, and then you're queued up on the 05. So everything hinges on the state budget cycles and that sort of thing, but don't be surprised if something does come forward. Something to keep that process moving because of the jobs.
Okay. Well, that would be important to make sure that we monitor that.
Stay ahead of it. Right.
And so we have been monitoring it every year to see where we are, but we also have not been in a position to move forward with the referendum. So that the two are.
So well, it certainly helps to move for the referendum if you're going to have.
Exactly.
Money from the state. So,
exactly.
Well, I mean, do we know where we're ranked now or not?
No, like I said, they'll reprioritize once they get to that 05 list.
Oh, okay.
They're going to reach out to the school districts, update all their data since it is old, and then if districts fall off, they fall off the list, and then they reprioritize.
Is there anything proactively we should be doing? I mean, at that time we had 12 portables. Now we have 30 or whatever.
From our perspective, outside looking in. Everything hinges on the state's financial health. That's a top priority for them to fund this program because it's very popular and it's definitely needed. So as soon as the state gets past their convulsions right now with pension reform and things like that, then I think you're going to see that.
But we're not talking like full grants or anything like that. You're talking about
Yeah, $1.5 million worth of money, right?
No, not even that. The preliminary number that I calculated, because it's based on a, I'm looking at the exact picture of it. It's based on a state calculation and a grant index, and based on the concepts that we've developed in these plans, you may be looking at anywhere from 16 to 20 million.
This was the 205 list, so we do know what they've done since the 205.
Absolutely.
So yep. Who have they knocked off the list?
Well, they go through the 03 list, the 04 list, and then they'll get to the 05. They haven't gotten there yet.
They haven't gotten to the 05. When's the last time they did that?
We've got two new high schools down in the southern part of the state that are being constructed right now, and they're on the 03 list.
Okay.
And so that's the last round, and they may be creeping into the 04 cycle.
And how many are on the 04 cycle?
It's all on the website. Okay. We can pull that down and see.
You know, some districts will fall off because they already passed a referendum,
sure.
And they don't have any.
Where their growth is declining.
But to me,
their growth is declining.
To me, that's research we could do, right? I mean, we could go to the 04 list and say, oh, look at this. These people passed referendums. We could tentatively knock them off the list. I mean, we may not know until we get to that point, but we can make certain assumptions.
I think that's work to be done
right.
in the next phase once you've decided on a plan, in what direction.
Because if we decide to say status quo, clearly.
So, in terms of the referendum, you have to have a past referendum to qualify for the funds. Is there some cart before the horse thing, or is it some time limit you have when you get approved for the funds to pass a referendum, or how does that work?
So I don't know if we want to, I mean, just an idea, we could put this on a parking lot and get some facts and then...
I know this is a deeper discussion, but
it's part of the challenge of planning your referendum is what you would put in that pot of money because, you can't count on it. And so, the other pieces of it, and there's in this book, Ron has done some of that, looked at
that's
what
right.
are the kinds of things maybe you would put into that, the state grant, you could do later.
Right.
You may finish your building, and then you could do that later or something because you've gotten the money afterwards.
Right. If there's something that's not time-sensitive that you can add later in the context of the master plan.
But it is a real possibility. Because we're on this list, okay, it's not
the
like
thing just is you just what you can't do is you can't plan your building amount of money on the state money because you could be disappointed.
that's what happened to Winfield because they went forward, the money got pulled, they had to borrow. And so they got caught.
Right. So you end up making it like a part of your alternate plan.
It is out there. I would say it's a long shot, but it's certainly something that we should be
absolutely and do research.
Clear.
To circle back around to what you said right out of the gate, you have a very high ranking.
Yeah, I know we were very high
because of the house,
but they never have any sympathy for us. That's why they sock us with so many taxes. So. Anyway.
Okay, so what we did then, we went back at the board's direction in 2012, and we began to look at the direction that had come out of the 2009 plan that had been put on hold for a little bit. And the direction at that point was, let's pursue, facilities, and we'll talk a little bit more about the way in which we pursued it. But these were the long-term goals, to identify those deficiencies that we would still have, plan for a full-day kindergarten environment, plan for the 21st century learning upgrades that we had to run, and then all of the infrastructure needs that we identified really back in the 2007, but certainly in the 2009 master facilities plan. And then ultimately the real goal is to bring all of our students, 500-plus students who are housing portables, under permanent structures.
One thing that hit me the other day on 500 students, because this was on the, and somebody correct me on my math if I'm wrong along the way. On 531, the enrollment report showed 453 K-5 students in portable classrooms.
K-5, we also have Hadley.
And Hadley, we have a total of 45 classrooms, 35 in the building, and 10 portables. We have 1,230 children as of 531. We have 22% of our classrooms are in portables, if my math's right, 10 over 45. That comes out to 273 students if you do it per student, 22% of our students. That adds up to 726 students in portable classrooms.
And we probably do not have 26, so we probably don't have 700 students in portables because of class sizes and individual, and the students at Hadley will rotate through those. But we certainly have minimally 500.
Well, I look at it like this, and it's important, because it's a big differential, 500 to 700.
It is.
If you have 35 classrooms that are in the building and 10 outside, and they're all utilized equally, are they or are they not? If they're not, if they are, there's only so many minutes in a day, and the student's spending it. They're moving around, I understand that. So you can break it down to student minutes. And then every student minute, you can say that that's a kid in the classroom. It's 22.2% no matter how you slice it. 22.2% of... So I don't want to get caught up in numbers, but to me it's a big difference because when I started running for the board, I kept focused on the shadowed ones in our enrollment report. But 22% of over 1,200 kids is another 273 kids that, you know, I know it's a partial day, but when you add all those partial days up in that day, it's 273 students in that classroom. That's 726. To me, that's a huge difference. I mean, 500 is unacceptable. What's 726?
Unacceptable.
More unacceptable.
Which is why we're here.
Yeah. Right. But I know. But we're talking, to me, the message is
by 50%.
Yeah, the message is important. I mean,
so
to
make it, do a more specific counting.
Which
well, we've been, you know, we've said over 600, we've said over 500, and
right.
Because we have focused on other things other than the actual numbers, but counting the heads of students involved.
Well, clearly, I know if you only had 30 students, it's a really low number, you don't have a problem. As you keep getting bigger and bigger. And quite frankly, I mean, when we're looking at these plans, how many students are we replacing in portables? And to me, that's important when you're designing buildings.
I totally agree, because if we're building for 500, and let's just say we stay at 500 and we start going, okay, let's make sure there's growth of 10 or 20%, we're undershooting our student time ratio. So.
When we look at the numbers of that we'll show you a little bit later, we're looking at trying to build housing for a larger number of students than currently exist in the system, but not excessively larger, simply because our enrollment data has remained stable. And we don't want to overbuild, but we want to build enough that you've got some flexibility in your building.
But I think Joe makes a good point. Let's make sure that's a good confidence number. If it's 500 or if it's 750, let's start off on firm footing.
I think the concept of a kid goes to a portable from 80th class is not one that we've looked at it. You know, I think we've always stayed a little more conservative, but that's a way to look at it.
Well, and some of it is, and we've talked about this over the years, it's true, but every fall in August we can have a pop and we're adding Forest Glen a couple of years ago, we added a whole other section, literally in August. We were pulling out and pushing in. So, at Hadley, too, those use of that space changes. I know at Churchill it's changed over time, just depending on the numbers. So each year can fluctuate. And I think the term shadow is probably a good one because there is there's an unknown quantifier come August, depending on where we see a blip.
And we tend to shuffle, we move our classrooms based on every year's, determination of need and where portables are. And some there have been years when an office has been housed in a portable rather than students because you could move the students inside. And so that's always desirable. And so it's, we can do a head count, and that may be more specific is just actually doing a head count.
My point was just that I've, as a parent, before I joined the board, I looked at these numbers and I know what I saw, and I never counted those Hadley kids going in and out because they're only spending partial time there. when you start looking at it from a percentage of students.
Well, and at the junior high, it actually could have larger numbers of students because your class sizes are larger and they'll fluctuate.
Yeah. There's a variance there.
If our literacy classes are out there, they, you know, class size might be 28. If you have a math class out there, it might be 40. You know.
Right.
Okay, so so the final goal then really is for us to build facilities that will house all of our children in our schools and even in portables. And I think that has been the goal since the 2009 master facilities plan. And that was ultimately the recommendation they made to the board was to bring students under roof. So short term, and we continue to look at what came out of the master facilities plan? What kinds of things can we do to our facilities on an annual basis with our capital projects that will keep our buildings moving along, keep the infrastructure as sound as we can possibly make it, and begin to enhance the facilities within the existing parameters? And so you all know about the Hadley LMC project. We think it's one of, you know, it's a really, it's a project we're very, very proud of. Because we think it symbolizes the changes of a 21st century learning environment. We think it will create an energy at Hadley that will set the stage for different kinds of learning experiences for students and set the stage for imagining what a 21st century school might look like. We are looking to do what we can in the elementary schools for next year in order to create that STEM theme lab environment and create literacy labs and math labs for students who need intervention. And so in doing so, we've had to work within the spaces we have and make modifications next year that will be very moderate. I know that we've talked about doing something more construction-oriented in the elementaries to create those STEM labs, and we think that's something to begin the conversation now and over the course of the summer so that if that is going to happen, it can be built into the capital project model for FY14. And those are things that you'll begin to have a conversation about, and we have some thoughts about that as well. So where did we come from in terms of the 2009 master facilities? And I just want to review with you the guiding principles that that group created. And that was a group of about 30 people made up of community members, parents, a couple teachers, administration, and then FGM. And we worked from a process of study groups. We looked at the past. And we looked at what had been proposed before, and the study groups broke up into, you know, smaller four-people groups and did their homework, their research, and then reported back. But the principles that that group created were that whatever facilities we create should empower learning for students. It should empower parents in their involvement and their access to the learning through technology. And that it should be a structure that can accommodate and be restructured as the learning environment needs change. And so over time, do you have the ability to adjust your learning spaces to adjust for curricular changes that you may want to make? We would say those guiding principles still hold true today. Now, before we go into what the A and B series was, what happened before that? What happened in 2002? What happened in 2004? And in 2002, following the referendum of 2001, as John said, there was a desire to reduce class size, a desire to add some programs into the curriculum, and a desire to begin to look at facilities to house programs that were currently being squished out of any kind of learning spaces, whether it was having special program classes like ESL Bilingual being offered in hallways or in small closet areas, having band and orchestra on the stages or in janitorial closets, all kinds of things where we were housing programs that we thought were essential for our students and their learning, and just weren't able to be housed in the school. So the 2002 led to a task force in 2004. Actually, the Blue Ribbon Committee came even before that, and that Blue Ribbon Committee said, you need to do something about facilities, but didn't make any recommendations about that. So a task force was formed in 2004 which began to look at what facilities could, what could be offered. And they came back and made a recommendation to the board of four options. And the option that they chose at that time was to create a five-six school and a 7-8 school. And the 5-6 school, so we pulled the sixth graders out of Hadley and placed them in a school of their own with fifth graders, and then Hadley would be a 6th and 7th.
Seventh and eighth school.
Location was not determined, but options that were offered at that time were Spalding, because it was a vacant lot, and then McHadley, two campuses. And by 2007, the recommendation, was noted when I came into the district, the recommendation was to create a 5-8 intermediate center at Hadley with 5 and 6 grade students housed together in one school and 7-8 students housed together in another school. And we began that work then immediately to take that to referendum. As you all know, that referendum failed significantly, and nearly 80% of the community voted against it. And so when that work had been done,
Can I just go back to the...
Sure.
The driving force between a 5-6 center based on the, what they call themselves, the task force?
Mm-hmm. 2004 task force.
The driving reason for a 5-6, as best as I understood it, is that two things. The entire community would benefit from it. So everybody would touch it because all 5th and 6th graders were going to one location for 5th and 6th grade, right? And the second thing was the ability to put things in the building that would allow 5th graders and really 6th graders to, from a curriculum perspective, get things that they weren't necessarily getting at either an elementary school or at Hadley. So that was really the driving force between the 5-6 concepts.
Well, that relieved the pressure then at each elementary site because you pulled 6th grade.
Yeah,
5th grade.
What it didn't do was eliminate all the portables, presumably. But it would eliminate many of them. The rejected options were a K-5 at Spalding and a K-6 at Spalding at that time. And the fourth option, which was to do nothing and just keep adding portables, which they didn't even, they rejected that completely.
But they did it.
So in between the 5-6 task force recommendation and our referendum, and you'll see on your sheet, we did look at other options that are on there. So where Menards is, the old Omni, we looked there. We looked at Main Street from the Park District. Main Street was not a building that would be turned over to us, but there was, I forget the number, anywhere from 10 to 16 classrooms that we could use because they still needed part of the facility because at that time they didn't have the Ackerman Sports Center. So they only had two facilities. So there was sharing of space at Main Street. We looked at that. We even looked at, you guys know where the Aldi is. That used to be vacant land, but it was not in our district. But we looked at maybe buildings, the idea of building a school there, and then having someone else own it and we lease it.
Jack, you said Aldi?
Yeah, where the Aldi is on Roosevelt Road.
Nicole Way.
Yeah.
Yep. That was vacant.
Yeah, all that land was vacant at
all
some point.
All back in there.
Right?
Okay.
And we, so we looked at, hey, could we buy that land, but someone else would have to own it because it wasn't in our district, and then we'd lease it back. I forget what it was called, but there was some trend going on in those years.
Lease purchase?
What was it called?
I think a lease purchase.
Lease purchase. It was something. So... you know, we got as creative as we could, thinking outside our boundaries, you know, as well as inside our boundaries.
But one of the drivers, too, I think what's interesting when you see the timeline is that that independent committee in 2002, there was this huge binder that I had been given. I don't know why. I think it's board secretary at the time, and I went through it. And it was so interesting to read the kind of summary because it speaks to, John, what you're saying, which is this independent committee, but for some phrasing,
was really is talked about back then exactly what we're talking about now. I mean, some of the issues haven't changed significantly. The concern about needing to address, you know, long range, you know, looking out is still the same. But the other thing that I know we talked about too, when 0304 recommended the 5-6, and then it came back as an iteration of take 5 and put into Hadley and create those wings, was still born out of an interest by this task force that said, this makes sense, there's like or common learning needs, we can increase, to your point, some of the science lab opportunities that elementaries don't have available, but upgrade some of that. But I remember one of the big pushes against the referendum was really about the desire to keep fifth grades at the schools for neighborhood schools, which I certainly respect, you know, that desire to do that, but it essentially shut down some of the opportunity to, you know, unpack how many kids we have in these schools. So it put us back into, so, you know, to Don's point, what do we do?
Yeah,
but that messaging was, you know, heard.
I mean, I think that was a big miss from the board's perspective, and me not, you know, being from Glen Ellyn at the time, you know, just new to Glen Ellyn. The neighborhood school concept was culturally something that we missed, because that's largely why I think the referendum didn't pass, or at least the people I spoke to.
But what's so interesting about that too is that from a cultural perspective, the desire to have neighborhood schools with portables, that, you know, and all that brings in terms of moving and inside, outside, safety issues, that's still not enough of a piece, at least not right now, maybe it will be, that would say, you know, we need to try and look at this in a different way or more creatively.
Well, the 5-8 came back at the Master Facilities Group in 2009, and as we look through that A and B series, you'll see it's still there, but rejected. The committee said, you know, this is not a viable option. The community spoke to us in 2007. While it is an idea, it's an option that, you know, one could consider. It's not one that we would make a recommendation to the board for, because it was
rejected.
It was so soundly rejected.
Was that? I don't know if we got data on that rejection. Was that rejection? The parents of the students rejected it, or the community rejected it, but the parents were for it? I don't know if we ever got that.
It was rejected, I think, across the board. And one of the things, you know, that the board discussed and was challenged by, it was a very quick campaign. You know, we did that campaign in a much shorter time than would be recommended for a referendum campaign. And we, you know, we knew there was a huge challenge in that, but the board also felt at that time, we need a response. You know, we've been talking about this for so long, and we've been working on this, and I think the board, John, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, the board believed it was a viable solution, and that, you know, we needed to get direction from the community as to whether or not.
So did we fail in spite of ourselves? Is that what happened? We just didn't. If we present a good idea in a time frame that should be presented to the community, you think they have a better option? Or,
well,
let's just not go down that path.
I think it really depends.
Don't beat yourself up.
Well, Patrick, you know, the one thing that, you know, we've talked about is, what will community support look like? How will we hear it? And is there a solution that, you know, both meets the needs of the 21st century learning environment and is doable, affordable, and is supported by the community? I think it's a question we continue to grapple with. And I don't think we failed ourselves in that campaign, as aggressive as it was. What we didn't hear from the community during that time, and that's an important point, is we need better facilities now.
Yeah.
We need you to do something to get rid of the portables. Yeah. And
we're
still
not an urgency.
Not an urgency.
We're still not hearing that, right?
But, you know,
One of the questions I have, though, I mean, we're talking now, you know, almost 7 years later, right? I mean, 7 years, a lot can happen. You can grow the number of students you have in portables, for one thing. We know that happened. But to me, this K through 6 or this 5, 6, I mean, we can vet that. I mean, we can't we go out to the community? I mean, I think we have to eliminate it as options. Because you, what that referendum told me something. I moved here right before it happened. But it told me that there's people who have children who didn't want their fifth graders to go to Haplin. And I heard that when I was new to the community. But that's all anecdotal. And then you had people who said, well, I don't want my taxes to go up. So it loses 80-20. Mm-hmm. But you don't know the you don't know the breakout.
No.
But the people that don't want their taxes to go up, that's probably all the same here. But what is this number here? And if that's maybe that's shifted. Maybe a 5 and 6 concept is okay today because people realize learning is different. Maybe people have been educated about 21st century learning and all this, and they can see the help it does with curriculum and all that. But my point being, we can vet that before we go and do another referendum. You don't want to educate yourself through a referendum.
Well,
and ultimately you will.
And we did talk about, we would, because we are not residents of the district, if they allowed us to come into their district, we would be obligated to pay tuition.
Right, and then you compare that.
And it could be fought in the courts. I would just say to you that could be fought in the courts because the school code says that you cannot attend a school district for educational purposes only. In other words, we don't allow non-resident students to attend our schools because they think our schools are better than we in our district 89 and some other school districts. So to think that you might not get challenged in the court?
I'm not looking at it moving the kids to the new school. I was looking at it if there was a school not used, that you were operating your eighth grade classes at that facility. You were renting the facility. In that case, you're not paying tuition. You're using your teachers.
They were not interested in that.
Though. Right, but if that were an option, then you're not paying tuition. It's only when you're...
If they had decided to consolidate two of their schools into one and they had a vacant school, then we'd probably be talking about a different situation where they might be willing to lease.
Right, lease versus, yes. Because I understand the tuition now is tied with them teaching kids, and I'm not for that one.
But I think, all of these considerations, and Joe, we did do what was called at that time by the Master Facilities Committee, back of the envelope. Cost. But when you don't have schematics, I'm maybe not using the right word, Ron, but the more developed plan, it's very difficult to get an accurate budget. And we were very concerned about putting dollars out there that were highly undeveloped and become factual. But what I will tell you is that the Series A is significantly more expensive than the Series B.
That's what I was going to say, is that the idea of repurposing, to take our schools, and that was more expensive than building something new.
Yeah.
That was the problem. Part of the problem is when you open up a building, you got to go to all the newer codes.
From all of us who live in old homes, we know.
Right, and that became a problem.
That was the case with Hadley. It was amazing that the cost of redoing Hadley, lopping that old wing up and rebuilding, it was more cost effective to build a brand new garage. I mean, by almost 2 times.
Most of that is, you're hitting the new codes for all your site work right now. When you build a school like Ben Franklin in 1920, whatever, they don't have, what's their detention requirements? The current detention requirements.
The interesting thing is, if you did the order of magnitude estimates on these things versus
the cost,
that's what happened here. This was back of the envelope decided there are some things that would never pass. I mean, $100+ million.
And you'll even see in the new Series C and D that we've done some back-of-the-envelope cost estimates and really broken it out by, kind of categories, that infrastructure, building,
comprehensive,
and then
That's great.
Yeah, you've got all that detail, and I would guess I would also say that regarding costs is that, you know, it's sort of not fair to actually go back to those numbers because the curriculum has changed.
Yeah.
And the needs have changed, sure. And so the A series really should be retooled.
Yeah, the design is totally
exactly.
Understood.
Yep. So why don't we move on to the C series, which would be, oh, go ahead, John.
Well, I didn't know if you were going to go there, but there's also a point where the board, the responsibility of master facilities got moved from the board to the finance committee. Is this where you're going to see?
No, I'm not.
That's
but that Erica mentioned that just Erica a little bit ago, that that was that comprehensive analysis that then took place.
So the finance committee is the one that went through these and came back with their financial due diligence back to the board. And that took about a year.
Yeah, and after the whole board...
That wasn't the speed.
We had to do the analysis.
We all had to re. That was that what I was reading from John that Sam asked for copies of. That reanalysis.
Right,
we all had to do it.
But the master. So, and this is where maybe I, because I was out for a little bit, but the finance committee came back with a recommendation for large parcel, or the finance committee came back with. We've looked
Spalding.
At all these.
We've looked at all these, and Spalding is not adequate, but we believe a new facility should be built. And if you can find a better parcel of land, that's what you should do.
So I think that's what came out of the finance committee, right? Okay.
It came out of the board's analysis, which is the whole board, and then the finance committee took that data and came, you know, brought that back, and then I sent a document out to the board later saying, here's my summary of what I believe you have set. Please confirm that this is your thinking.
That's this. We had to concur.
Yeah. And so that was another step that was taken. And then it came back using all of the data, all of the information from the 2009 plan as a starting point. We did, the next step was administrative work. We have not taken our thinking back out to the whole community. We delayed it coming back to the board until now. And of course, the land acquisition has been tabled, so that is a conversation that has not been finished yet. So,
let's move on.
Are we ready to move on to where we are currently?
Well, let me just step in and say that the document that Erica was referring to earlier, Maureen has already emailed it to all of us, I assume. I've gotten a copy,
you
so you will have it. If you wish to look at it now, you can.
See, it wasn't fast enough for me. Which is what I told her.
But it's a good idea to move out.
Okay, so we have two more series to share with you, and that's and both of those series are current series. But one is, you know, presuming land acquisition, and this is what we were going to move forward with was reconfiguring each of our elementary buildings in order to support the STEAM curriculum, and you'll see some of those drawings a little bit later when. Ron's going to go through those. We've talked about right-sizing each of our buildings down to 450, which is about right for the size of the land and for the current infrastructure that we have there. And it would help us improve traffic. And then convert Hadley to a four-section, 600-student elementary, which would also include our early childhood program.
So, sorry, it's just so I'm clear, three sections means three sections... per grade.
So if we were doing our traditional grades, K, 1, 2, 3. So if we were doing it by levels, which we're now looking at, we'd be talking about 6 at level 3, 6 at level 2, and 3 at each of K-1.
Okay.
Now with a full-day kindergarten, I will tell you, at full-day kindergarten, we looked at 4 for every elementary because we now generally have 4 sections of kindergarten in each of our buildings. It can fluctuate, but so we'd be looking at 4 classrooms at kindergarten. And then build a new junior high on the site to be determined. That was Series C, and Ron, I need to show some of the thinking of that in our next slide. So when we talked about capacity, as you can see, our capacity currently, or as of February, could be, you know, 3,650 today, or 63, whatever it might be. But we thought we should build capacity for about 3,800 students, which gives you more room, but not an excessive amount of room, like looking at 5,000 or something like that.
And so the 450 would be right size for the existing buildings.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then our current, you know, we've been looking at different ways of configuring our buildings. When we were in think tank, were we going to arrange our buildings by STEAM classrooms or by literacy classrooms, or were we going to do it by grade level or leveled groups, 2-3 together, 4-5 together, K-1 together. And so you see that our first level of thinking was keep it by grade level band, K-1 together, 2-3, 4-5, and then add labs into our building structure so that we could house a STEM curriculum as well as have smaller spaces for intervention labs. We later, in the conversations around think tank, moved to literacy wings, 2-3, 4-5, and STEAM wings, 2-3, 4-5. And each of the buildings worked on their plan for next year based on, you know, how they could best accommodate those schedules.
And all of those plans are in the report.
And all of those plans are in the report.
These are just little samples.
Yeah. So the next slide, which is I think where Ron's going to pick up, we started to look at a long-term plan to create those curriculum, those programmatic pieces we wanted, house all students under roof, and maintain a school of 450 students. So, Ron?
Okay. The next handful of diagrams that you see here are all in the report, and these are just going to be samples of those reports. And I believe, just to put some context in here, you know, we started this process probably a year ago, just about a year ago this month. So this has been a long process that really finished in March. But anyway, this is representative of what's in the report for each of the individual elementary sites. This particular slide is a graphic to show you what portions of the building will be demolished in the long-range plan. And it's important to note this because we're going to talk about in the short-term plans implementing some of the demolition that's outlined here for next summer in order to implement the STEAM program. Mm-hmm. So everything we're looking at short-term is going to be done in the context of this long-range plan that you see here.
Is this stuff that's done over the summer?
That dialogue is going to start. It's what we did the Hadley edition in, you know, started in April and finished that in August. So we can do new construction. These are more complicated because there are
the Hadley edition is only 3 classrooms, right?
Well, it's 4 classrooms, and that's about the same size as what we're proposing for these STEAM labs. But it's going to likely involve building replacement. So we need to work on that. We need to work on that and see what the options are.
Generally, the thought is this may be able to be done over an April to August time frame. The drawings you're showing us.
Yes. Yes.
To get us STEAM ready, could be done.
Mm-hmm. You might have to alter the start of the year for a particular school. If that's happening.
But the idea is it's not a 6 or 7 month project.
We're looking at March to August.
Yeah. Right now.
March to August, or conversely, and I know we need to have this discussion, but we might start in June, and then maybe the building, we would have temporary provisions until the building is finished, but the project maybe goes into October, as opposed to because of utilities and other things. But that's the discussion we have to have.
And that's a conversation that, you know, once the short-term conversation the board needs to have, that would be one of the critical conversations. Do you want to move forward with something that you can do without a referendum that will bring some change to our facilities? Not going to address housing. It's really going to address curricular issues. But creates some of that energy around what is possible. And then how do you go about doing that? But it would be done, which is why we're showing you these drawings, in the context of a larger plan for that school.
And
this is step one.
And we're going to be hitting so many birds with one stone because we're looking at, you know, the roofing replacement. You know, things that are scheduled to come up for replacement are going to be addressed in this new curriculum, infrastructure upgrades, new building program. So it. Portable replacement at Lincoln, we would actually eliminate 2 portables with this short-term STEAM plan. Lincoln, so there are all sorts of benefits to doing this.
Yeah. Lincoln might be the priority site, actually,
right,
because we've got some portables that are need to be replaced.
Mm-hmm.
We've got roofing that needs to be done. And so, you know, it may be that if this project is viable, that would be the first site, just because you can get to some of those capital projects we know we have to do.
Okay, the next diagram in here. Whoa, fast on the draw. Whoa, there you go. The next diagram shows the new proposed, this is actually quantity takeoffs to show you, the board members, if you care to dive into the detail. What is being replaced, what's being remodeled, what's being heavy remodeled, what has heavy remodeling, what has light remodeling. All of these area calculations tie to the long-range plan. So you'll see all these area calculations in the report.
So the second floor goes where in the diagram?
This has no second floor.
I know, but you say down there that...
It's got a second floor.
Where would that be?
Oh, I'm sorry. That's sort of it's a mezzanine. It's actually right over here by the gym. It's a storage area.
Okay.
You had me scared there because in the A and B series we had second floors.
Right, no,
we did have second floors,
I do remember
yeah.
that. So if I've got my geography right, the portables would be gone then.
Yes. This reflects the right sizing of the site. It supports 450 kids. All mobile classrooms are gone, and this parking lot now will function as originally designed when it was built back in the late 1990s.
So what am I missing then? Where's the extra 150 kids going to go then?
We're working on that. We'll get there.
Okay. It's coming. Okay. Sorry.
But there are challenges to this. I mean, it's not ideal.
Okay, long-term space usage plan. This gives you a snapshot, color-coded, for the long-term organization of the building. And as Ann talked about before, we have the lab spaces. We had clusters of grades working together, and so this is going to be the final layout. And then this is sort of a zoomed-in shot of the innovation lab and the new office area. Because at this particular site, again, without getting into a lot of detail, we've actually relocated the administrative office into this west wing for a lot of different reasons, but I think the takeaway here is that we have baked into these solutions many, many, many of the items that came up during master planning,
right,
circulation, safety, parking, all of those ancillary things are now integrated into this. Even to the point, you know, when you talked about the sites, you know, maximizing the green space, that was our goal in these solutions, so you're going to see that reflected in these solutions. All right, next slide. All right, you know, associated with the new junior high space, you know, one of the things that we wanted to bring forward was, you know, innovative and creative spaces and flexible, a lot of flexibility in that space. And our committee didn't really get a chance to dive into that in any great detail. So we brought forward some images of what has been occurring at some other schools that we would integrate into these final solutions should I move forward, or even elementary school, or even additional space at Hadley. And these are this little image down here in the left-hand corner is called a cafetorium. It actually has tiered seating. You can see the tables set up here as a cafeteria, but those tables can be taken away, chairs put in, and then it becomes an auditorium. And that's a really good solution at a junior high, middle school level. If you can't afford a full-blown performing arts center, which would be ideal, but this is sort of a middle ground.
Where's Hickory Creek?
That's down in Frankfort. Who's that? Oh, sorry. I heard the voice,
sorry.
I didn't notice that. And then these are little samples of extended learning areas. And I know, you know, we really had a deep focus on integrated resources in the last round, but... These extended learning areas are little places, little support spaces where kids can come and cluster and just get together and collaborate. It's a collaborative space in the schools, very, very popular, and we'd be integrating these sort of spaces in the new concepts. And then ultimate flexibility. This is a gymnasium. during the day, and then go ahead to the next. And then we have telescoping seating. These are actually theater seats with a stage off to the right, so it could be a PE space / theater. And these are actually acoustic clouds, and it's designed to be supported by. It's designed to be acoustically treated, but yet deal with the durability issues that you find in the gym, which is ideal for elementary kids. All right, some new music spaces and art. This is sorely needed at the elementary school. You know, inspirational, airy, bright and airy art spaces, because those are creative spaces, and that's the kind of thing that we wanted to bring forward. But the kind of thing that we kept in mind when we did our layouts of the elementary schools is to create these energetic spaces that people wanted to go to. All right, now this is. There's just a lot of information that we're trying to distill, so this is just to give you a flavor of what's actually in the report. But all of the plans that we developed, again, are in the report, and all of the budgets are in the reports also. Yes?
Can I just ask a real quick question? The school that you showed us, how many junior high students does this house?
I want to say that Hickory Creek, I think, was very similar in size. It might have been a little bit smaller, maybe
1,300.
Yeah, right.
Okay. And what was the square footage?
I can get you the profile. I'll get you the building profile.
Okay.
Student capacity and the whole 9 yards. I'll get that for you.
Just curious.
Okay, numbers. Numbers, I know, are very important. And so in the report, you're going to see, as Ann mentioned before, the details associated with the costs. And they're all broken down into three major categories: new program scope, maintenance scope, and then optional scope. And this sort of ties off to some of those discussions we had about the grant funding, to try to triage the overall cost of the project so that you could perhaps maybe have some optional scope built into the plan. And the new program scope is really meant to implement the new curriculum. And if you saw the C series summary there, and this would include the new junior high budget is in there. Converting Hadley to the 600 student elementary is in this budget, and then right-sizing each one of the elementary schools. That's what you see in the new program space. Then we have maintenance. We have a lengthy list of items that we are tracking in terms of large mechanical equipment, roofing, paving. That sort of lives outside of new program scope, and it's really maintenance related. So all of those numbers for each site have been updated to reflect the new program. In other words, if we're demolishing a portion of the school, we pulled it out of the roofing program. So it makes sense. So that we did the best job we could with trying to correct the long-range maintenance plan. And, of course, the last item is optional scope, and an example of something that's in the optional scope would be to replace your unit mitts at your existing elementary sites with a ducted overhead ventilation system. Now, unit vents are archaic, and really schools are the only building type that use unit ventilators, you know, through-wall unit ventilators with a fresh air.
Individual.
Yes, in each room, those clunky. Yeah. And actually, you know, with current sound issues that are related to LEED and sustainable and quality of educational space, unit vents can't even be used because they're so noisy, the decibel level is just too high. So what we've done in here is we've, again, baked in here numbers to give you an order of magnitude of what a new mechanical system would cost. And actually, you can compare that to your replacement value, because the replacement values are the baseline, and then if you decide to upgrade, you would see the difference in the report. All right, and a few things just touching on a few things that are included in the report. You're going to see light, heavy, and medium remodeling. These are conceptual drawings, and if you remember the color-coded diagram showing areas and colors, that's all tied to the light, heavy, and medium remodeling with a different dollar value. And I might note that for the new construction, we actually used your Hadley classroom addition, so it's good current information for small additions. So we use that the bid information that we've received and some of the remodeling costs are the basis of the values that we see.
That's a special education decision?
Yes.
Correct.
Yes. Right.
That we got to double that. So, can
I just ask you something about this? Because this was a big debate years ago. But conceptual drawings means we're in a plus or minus 20%.
Of what?
Of what, you know, you go to conceptual drawing, then you go to detailed drawing. You know, you go through these stages, right?
Yeah.
Well, here.
I'm asking you.
Yeah. Actually, it's a snapshot of where we are today based on the information we pulled. From the programming process. So what we would do next is actually get into more detail about the space programs and define usages in the rooms. We've got allowances in many cases in the cost models. So we would actually better define the spaces and what exactly occurs in each building and then price that. So it's kind of apples and oranges and pears as you go through the process. We would be tweaking the scope and then updating cost information.
There are no concept drawings for a junior high.
Correct.
So
all it is
that would be estimates based on the kinds of
square foot per student.
Square foot. Yeah.
Those are square foot. And then.
So these, I'm just going back to what we used to talk. There used to be different stages in the process where you get a higher level of confidence on your cost. So, what was the highest stage? Concept drawings.
Well, you would have, right now we're in concept, and then we would go into schematic design. That's the next phase.
Okay. So are these at a level considered concept drawings now?
Yes, they are.
For the elementary. No concept drawing ever made.
No drawings at all.
Or Hadley. Hadley,
we had a space diagram to show the academic wing off to the west, but again, it's very conceptual.
Yeah.
There's a variant of that.
So I just want to make sure everyone understands because, you know, this was part of the challenge of a referendum is, you know, usually concept drawings aren't enough to get you a level of confidence in the money you're asking for because you don't want to ask for not enough or you don't want to ask for too much. So then there was this next stage, I don't know what you called it, but the
schematic design, and you're actually going to see that in the schedule. That's a good point.
All right. Which costs money.
But I think what John's referring to was with the Hadley 5-8 and previous efforts, the board was not willing to spend the additional money to have a design that was more articulated.
Right.
Because every time you get level of detail costs more, the board chose not to, but rather keep it at the conceptual design. That also proved to be problematic in the community.
Yeah, the community asked questions, you know, like they did a think tank in terms of the detail. And if you couldn't provide it, then you couldn't get their support.
Right, and to Ann's point, we had a big debate about that. The board majority did not want to spend the dollars to do that, which, you know, in effect created some of our hamster, you know, egg and chicken thing in terms of being able to define further what there was a cost.
Plus time constraints.
Yeah.
That was another serious consideration. In order to do that properly, and so this has been modeled to reflect that. There's a schematic design process in our calendar here. It's coming up. Okay, again, site modifications are included in the budget. We've included allowances for asbestos abatement, health and safety, building maintenance, as I mentioned before, roofing, painting, and masonry, building improvement allowance, kitchen equipment, and then other soft costs and large equipment replacement. That's all, again, included in this long range. It's very comprehensive. All right, now, we've had several references to the Series D, and this is really summarizing the components that go into Series D. Again, the STEAM labs are part of this long range plan. And it's fair to say that the elementary buildings, the right sizing of each elementary site is still intact in this model, in this D series, with the footnote that we need to now deal with the early childhood component and does that live in each site because in the Hadley conversion model, all early childhood was at Hadley. So now we can either continue that with some sort of infrastructure at Hadley for early childhood, or we can try to locate that at each site.
it also doesn't right size a new building that's falling. I mean, we would agree that a 600 student building that's falling is
not right size.
Is really big.
Well, yeah, and we, yeah, which flies in the face of everything we just said in the, you know, doing that other master planning effort. But the, we did do concepts, and you actually have, some of you have the reference material out in front of you. I think it was 2011. Where we showed a two-story solution at the Spalding site, and that's a very urban solution. It's tight, but it's workable. And so that's why we brought it forward, to sort of show you the comparisons relative to a new junior high. Yes?
Hey, about the Spalding site, all your test fits didn't include the Village Park property, which obviously is in the Revenue and the floodplain.
It's the Park District.
Park District, right. The Village Park is on there. As that's how it's designated on their plan.
Okay.
It's 2.15 acres. Did anybody do any due diligence on acquisition of that? Or
well, we've talked with them about intergovernmental agreements.
Right.
And they certainly, I mean, that's not a piece of property that they have any plans for, right, or use for, whether they want to sell it to us or whether we want. We've said maybe we could do a trade for the detention pond that they built over at Main Street for this piece of property. But certainly they would enter into conversations with us on an intergovernmental agreement.
So 10 years ago the answer was no. And now I think there's a more open or willingness to have discussions.
Because once you take that 2.15 acres into your site, obviously the test fits change, and you have floodplain, and the ravine goes maybe to the parking lot there, and you put the ravine underground.
But you wouldn't put a parking lot on the Park District site. I mean, you'd have to.
Well, if you buy it.
If you bought it.
If you bought it.
And you did the proper detention.
Detention and the wheelbarrow.
Or playground.
They got it. Put a wheelbarrow and half thing.
Yeah, exactly right.
You got to do all that. But you
there's a penalty.
There's a penalty. But you, I mean, that's not that large of a site. So the cost associated with that can be pretty modest compared to the budget.
It's but not, but it's really the only park I think they have in that area.
Oh, community land.
Couldn't we then come up with an intergovernmental agreement that we build a new park and they have access to it?
Yeah, I mean, that's why you wouldn't put a park in the line.
No, but you'd have a park in your other area. I mean,
that's down the road
right,
in terms of how you would use that site. You know, we did lay out a plan for that site back in 2009, and that would be a good starting point in terms of how that piece of property, because, you know, we talked with the Park District at that time about the possibility of incorporating that land into our overall site and what would, you know, either by purchase or by intergovernmental agreement. So in that plan, we do incorporate that, I believe, as playground.
Playground, yeah. Mm-hmm. What, okay. But you haven't done any test fits with that other 2.15 acres?
Correct. Unless it was parking or playground area.
Building.
Because you can move your building this way. You've got all this land here. Your park over there, bring it up to grade.
Well, I think that now you're into the flood way, instead of the flood plain.
The flood way is right here.
Right, and so we really can't develop in that.
No, I mean, there's a buffer to it, but you still, we're not utilizing.
You're right.
That.
But Joe, I think that's a discussion that would have to be had further down the road.
I'm just asking the history to see if people have discussed it or not.
Yeah, so we did at one point.
What I read doesn't show that, and you know there's costs associated to it. But.
Well, I think, Ron, you told us in the past, you can fix any kind of floodplain with enough money. It can be, you know, adapted for, but again, what's the cost? What's the return on that investment?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's the floodway, though, you have significant issues.
Well, that's one of many hurdles with this site. We will be developing off-street parking in the right-of-way. There are a series of variances that will be required here. So this is going to be a long road to develop the 600
feet. And no sidewalks.
But that's a process. And actually, that would be something, the zoning would be a first step in that schematic design. We'd be looking into all that and the practicality of that.
What is the stormwater? Where does the stormwater? There's no curb and gutter. Where's the stormwater?
We have traditionally in the district buried stormwater. We have very large tanks over at Franklin and sadly, and we would like to do underground storage here too.
Where's the stormwater? Do you know where the points are?
No, no, I don't know where the outflow is.
Yeah.
Well, we may have.
Well, this
to go.
Is always wet because Carl plays lacrosse there.
Well, I can tell you that. Because he plays lacrosse there. He plays lacrosse there.
He
knows
where he's
wet. We may have to go all the way back to
Linoleum.
Yeah, I think you do. Yeah. I mean, I walked the site on Saturday and it was raining. The creek was moving quick.
Yeah.
But I looked for the storm water.
We were just there. We got called over there by the neighbors and the county and the park after a big storm we had a couple of months ago or 6 weeks ago. And the whole area was pretty well flooded.
Saturday morning, it barely rained. The First Avenue was flooded out to the middle of the street.
Mm-hmm.
So, and your stormwater is way far away. That's why I asked. Because mm-hmm. you're going to have to go hook up to it. And I don't know that that's cost is in there. And you have sanitary sewer right there, but you don't have, I don't know what a storm sewer is.
You'll see all of the detail in there, yeah. and they're all allowances at this point.
Well, nighttime reading.
Yeah, but they're also, is there you working, I'm sorry to get into this detail, but I look at the site and I read Spalding on this page, and it begs the question, if you have allowances, are you allowing the site to, as far
well,
as you have to go?
At that schematic design phase that we would get into, we would be doing preliminary engineering studies.
Right.
And we'd have that dialogue with DuPage County. In all in Glen Ellen and
there's a misnomer there though, I see on the site. Because if you were
there's a misnomer there what?
If you're we're looking at this site and we're doing conceptual drawings and we haven't looked where the stormwater is and if it's at Glen Ellen Road, I mean is it it's pro I mean it's just we don't have to fight it that far, but it's a full block over here. Right.
Well that's that next step that Ann was talking about, which is if the board believes at a conceptual level that this option is worthy of the next step, this is exactly where we were before
right.
too, then the board needs to say, let's put the dollars into the schematics and do the engineering and all those pieces.
Some of those questions.
So it's an if then.
Some of those questions with this site, because it is problematic, can be answered for far less money than doing a full-blown engineering study.
Yeah, but then that data then is used to design the building. The other component was the actual design, that something tangible that people could see was an important factor mm-hmm. coming out. Mm-hmm. And so that data would then go into the design of the facility. Where would stormwater go? Underground utilities would be one component of the whole picture.
No, I understand. Mm-hmm. I just think you have some pretty good factors with the site that you can answer that you're going to find out are not, you know, tens of thousands, but
you're
very
right.
quickly. And then it makes it a non-doable site.
Mm-hmm.
So
and
you don't
have the list.
Well, so you check it off the list.
But I think it's sure. on St. Charles, by the way. Not Glen Ellen. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, it historically, in Glen Ellen, it's been a struggle with local jurisdictions regarding stormwater and utilities. So it's a process that you really need to go through to get everybody to buy it before we can give you.
And this is unincorporated,
correct.
So I mean, you're dealing with a county.
The county has less stringent stormwater today than it did a year ago.
Yeah.
And Joe, there's another piece, and I don't know if you're aware of that, but because there are no sidewalks, I'm saying anyone that's not bordering the site, we'd have to provide bus.
We have to offer busing too.
Or pay for sidewalks.
Whichever.
And you still have safety issues coming out of that site because you're going to be bringing buses onto Main Street at high traffic times, and so you know no lights there unless they would be installed. So your entrance and exit into that whole subdivision is somewhat problematic. So I think spending too much time on Spalding, we keep coming back to Spalding because we always have nothing left to talk about. but no matter how we slice it, Spalding is remains a challenging site no matter what. And I'll just go back to the table discussion around the Wheaton College property. That's why that became such an important hope for the board, was because Spalding just keeps, you just keep coming back on,
for all the reasons that, you know, you've all been listing. And, I mean, so the challenges are great. And, I mean, I think, well, Dean, you raised a question of what are the other options when we put, you know, portables on all of our schools. I do think, you know, we're at a crossroads. And whatever that means, but...
That's my point, though, that we've gone to referendum, and it was no. We have to give, if we're going to go do this again, and we're spending time thinking about it, we're spending time costing out, that's all very good. But if we're going to do this again, I think we need an either or. We need to be able to say to the community, go through this, come up with our plan, whatever our best plan is, and say, here's the price tag, and make it good, and get deep enough in it, and say, by the way, if you don't do this, here's what we're going to do that we don't need to ask your permission for, and this is the result, because we can't keep up with the demands of what we have to do with this. And the portables, we keep saying, well, you know, we're not supposed to have them, but maybe we should be the ones saying, you know what, as a district, we're not going to have portables. So we're going to bring the kids inside, and what you're going to vote on is, do you want 40 kids in the classroom and have that happen to your property values? Or, you know, we're making it very easy, and we're spending a tremendous amount of effort for the district and the board, and the heck, the board, we're nothing compared to what the district spends on this. But there's no, everybody, it's just easy. They say, yeah, okay, well, we don't vote no. Go back and tell us about funding.
Well, it kind of circles back to when, you know, we were out in the audience, Patrick, and you guys had the vote on the college and property, and you tabled it. Drew brought up, you know, we really have to get to our priorities.
Yes.
And that, I wrote that down, because that, and that's, learning this history for at least us newbies here is important, because the priorities of the community, we have to understand what they are before we take any steps forward. And that's what you guys, what I saw in the audience, what you did on that day, and it made me reflect and say, okay, I agree with that. What are our priorities? What is the community's priorities? We have to reach out to them and find out, because what we have now is just a growing number of students ending up, or, you know, slightly growing now, in portals. And I understand
that's
exactly what Dean's saying.
Where we would leave this conversation is, you know, redefining or defining and asking the community to give a voice to what their priorities are.
Yeah, and that's going to be a real important step, because we're wasting our time coming up with all these plans if they're going to keep voting no.
All right. Again, proposed capacity targets. As I mentioned before, we had the early childhood component, and that's the delta between the 450 and the 470, so we've got to account for that. But bear in mind, too, that your mandate to us was study option C.
Yeah.
And so we added option B because we had all the material part to develop, so we wanted to show that to you because it was very easy.
And because we've tabled option
C. Exactly. All right, next step, short term. We're getting ready to go into July and take it easy, but there's a lot of things out there bubbling, so... what we are hoping, and we're proposing this to you, in order to hit some of your strategic targets, which is to roll out the STEM lab program in the summer of 2014. I believe we touched on it very briefly, but to implement the STEM labs in the elementary schools are going to be complicated, because we're taking building away and putting building back, and some of those are poor spaces with utilities passing through. So we would really recommend that we look at pulling in a construction manager for this effort so that he can buy into budget and schedule and give you real-time data rather than us saying, we think the market will bear this. This construction manager will come in and actually be responsible for that. So,
or she.
I say
she.
Okay. You know, close enough.
Or he.
There you go.
Or LGBT.
So anyway, we would recommend, strongly recommend we do that in July. Also at that time, we'll be developing budgets, developing preliminary budgets, but we need to get some feedback from principals and administrative staff before we can actually put those together, because again, it's complicated. August, knowing that the board usually goes through the two-meeting cycle, we hope to have, and we should have, some cost data for you in August to review regarding the labs in various locations. For potentially action. in September in order to authorize the construction documents to move forward. So that's, again, a tight timeline. September, October, November, construction documents, December, January, bidding, February, award, and then spring and fall construction during school. Again, we're going to have to study that very closely and bring all that data back to you so that you have numbers and schedule simultaneously to show the impact of each site. All right, next steps, long term, again, a proposed timeline for you that closes with a lot of the questions that we had tonight. June and July, again, board requests on the C&D series, potentially A and B, you know, wherever you want to go with this. That's you've got a lot of the data. You can study that. Then in July, again, we talked about pulling in a construction manager. If we did move into that schematic design phase, the hope would be that construction manager would give you real-time market cost data. You're going to see all sorts of numbers and good information in here, but then that construction manager then would own those budgets moving through the process. September, October, we would reconvene and evaluate the options for the long-range solutions, hopefully by November. I know this is aggressive, but November we would have potentially choose a long-range planning model, A, B, C, D, F, G, H, I. And then December through April is when we would develop those schematic design documents, and that's going to be a pretty monumental task given the number of sites that we're going to have to visit and the amount of information we'll have to pull out, but it's going to be very specific to the new curriculum, and it's going to be very specific to the current staff that are on each site. We'll go through interview processes and all sorts of things to pull that data. Then, hopefully by May of 2014, we would have give you scheduling and construction management numbers, real good budget numbers, actually estimates, not budget numbers, for a potential referendum. And then June and July, we would review the data, then potentially by August of 2014, begin the community engagement process in preparation for the consolidated general election in April of 2015. That's on the calendar, so we're thinking that that's on the DuPage County election site.
And this conversation reflects when the board talked to me about land acquisition, looking at, you know, a relatively aggressive schedule to get to referendum.
Sure.
And so whether or not this process gets altered, if you decide you really need to do the community engagement process first, you know, obviously your schedule changes in the way you look at things, but you'll complicate it as well by making some decisions about what you want to do with that short-term plan for creating STEAM labs. And so I think that's probably the most critical conversation for the board to have in the short term and with Paul, is to say, what, you know, do we want to do those short-term pieces, engage, how do we want to do this? And again, it goes back to those priorities. But we are combining in our thinking both the hope and the expectation that board members expressed to us in the spring or maybe last winter about we want to see some STEAM labs built. What they, you know, let's put some STEAM labs into the buildings, and unless we do some construction, we can't. What we'll be doing is reconfiguring a classroom.
I think at least the previous board and certainly me were very much dedicated and supportive of getting STEAM into our schools.
Right, and so that's, you know, that's short term.
I guess my question is going back to this portable thing. So we do the short term and we get the STEAM labs up and running.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have we then fixed, you know, have we put our first portable in and then we add our second and everyone's happy? In other words, does the short term thing, you know, are we wasting, I mean, not wasting, but are we spending money to do the short-term thing and then everybody's happy and then the long-term thing just doesn't happen again? Or are we duplicating things by doing the short-term and the long-term? I mean, another way I could look at this would be to say, you know, let's fix Lincoln. Long-term, short-term. Let's get that done. And then I'm going in once, I'm spending once. You know, I don't know if I'm wasting money by doing short-term and long-term. Is there any overlap? You know, those type of things is, you know.
What you're saying, go into Lincoln and implement the full long-term program rather than just the STEAM lab.
Yeah, I mean, are we spending money for the STEAM labs, and then we spent that money, and then we go for, let's say the long-term goes, so now we're adding costs because we're going in twice as opposed to going in once.
Oh, I see your question. No.
That's question one. Question two is, if we do the STEAM labs, have we sort of done what we did with the portables, which is fine, is put them in and say, okay, problem solved.
Yeah, but it's happened.
So now you have the portables and the STEAM labs. So people are happy because you've got this great new learning.
Right, and by the way, there may be nothing wrong with that, right?
I mean, except that they're temporary, right?
But
what, go back to John's first question. You know, staging this, what's the additional cost?
You see that in the report.
So it's broken out phase one, phase two. Good.
Per building.
Well, I know when you talked about the STEAM labs also, again, correct me, Ron, but you said that in planning this construction, you thought it through so that the other level of construction, you wouldn't be redoing it.
Right.
So
that's right.
This is, when this goes in, this is where it would live.
With the footnote. There's a footnote.
Yeah, there's got to be some inefficiency.
Because what our plan is, I don't have the diagram up here, but our plan is to move, to reconfigure the office space and to bring the teacher workroom area forward next to the main office in the new configuration at Lincoln. Again, you'll see that in the plan. But short term, we had talked about using those as classroom spaces. They could easily be converted to a teacher workroom once the full plan is implemented. The mobiles are gone, so
that's simple.
Baking those sorts of things into the long-term solutions. But yes, we're considering all ramifications when we go through these.
Can we go back to the construction time frame? If we take a June to October, so then we have those three critical months. The half of August and September and October. What's the proposal show for that as far as the students? I mean, is there swing classrooms something?
I think what I'd like to do is what we would do. The goal would be to get the overhead infrastructure in place so the kids can pass through.
Okay.
Everything's rerouted. The contractor stays on site. He's working. The kids can pass through and it's usable.
Okay. So then during the day, what? You know, construction tends to be noisy.
Right.
So what are we doing so that these kids can be in the best environment for learning?
The interesting thing at Lincoln is that because you have the pods, you've got this center pod that's isolated. So they'll be banging and hammering, and the kids are just passing through. It's not really a classroom space, per se.
Well, if they're banging and hammering, and it's two neighbors down, I still hear it if I'm sleeping at 7:30 in the morning on a Saturday and he starts hammering. So the kids are going to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we have to consider that in a big way because these are critical hours these kids are spending there. And it's probably different in each building.
And it may be that, we certainly have had conversations and there's a cost attached to this.
It's right.
The construction starts at 3 o'clock.
Right, exactly.
You're exactly right.
I mean, that's the alternative.
Yeah. And that's where the CM would come in and tell you that.
Yeah, because it's a lot better than relocating kids. The cost of relocating kids is hard to go ahead and put a dollar amount on that.
Yeah.
The dollar amount the CM can give us for 3 o'clock, the schedule is something we know. And we have to get buy-in from the community. And that's what we do. It's going to be extra money.
So we're doing the Hadley LMC right now, right? And that's around $1 million, roughly. How much can we spend per year on construction like this, new construction, without going out for referendum?
Well, we put a plan together last December when we presented the levy to the board, and the plan was to spend, I think, around $750,000 a year on construction costs implementing STEAM and STEM over the next few years.
Mm-hmm.
Because the board goal was we didn't want to accumulate too much in excess funds, so that was a good way for us to spend those dollars.
And that's about what we have in our budget? Well,
we budget annually. We budget millions or $1.5 million worth of construction projects.
Capital.
That's what I'm talking about.
This would be on top of that. So
and we could afford that now? We could afford to do $2 million a year?
If you want to spend fund balances, and that's been a core goal.
But you can only spend fund balances for so long until there's not fund balances.
Right.
Right.
So what I'm asking is, on a sustained basis with our projection what we have now? What can we spend a year in capital? Because if this comes back, that it's more than that, we're still talking about referendum, even to do this stuff.
You mean the short term?
Yeah, short term.
Well, what's the number for the short term at this point?
For the Lincoln plan?
For the steam short term plan, what's the number?
We haven't developed that yet. That's July.
Is it over 5 million?
Question.
For all sites?
Yeah.
We see everything that we talked about is going to factor into that premium time. We've got that. You know, if this was a simple addition like Hadley, I could give that to you like that.
Yeah.
But there are too many factors, stormwater and other things with this project. So I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
Which is why the planning has to be, why they're pushing the planning for July, right, so that if you can determine whether it's feasible to move forward in September and October.
Exactly.
And one of the things that the board, you know, has a policy on 25% of the
right
budget and fund balance.
Right.
And they asked us to create a plan for what will you do with the excess? What would you recommend for the excess? And one of those recommendations is to put, we put so much into land acquisition and then so much into capital projects each year. You would have to say, yes, we can do this up to this limit.
Mm-hmm.
And then your annual budget is going to have to be maintained at something between $1 million and $1.5 million
mm-hmm.
to be sustainable. We don't have in our budget projections for 5 years $2 million annually on capital projects. We've been able to do it on occasion, but we don't plan on that annually.
But we as a board could say we're willing to spend our reserves
right
to support this program.
Because they're not operational.
But I think we need to know what that is.
Yes.
We need to be able to say, here, we're going to put together a 5-year construction plan.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Here is all we have to spend on it. And
yeah,
keeping in mind there are other things that have come through that are unmandated, that are mandated and underfunded.
We have a 20-year capital plan. I mean, so you're making those decisions also juxtaposed to the capital plant we already have. I mean, that's your infrastructure needs, roofing,
boilers,
all that stuff that, you know, Bob has and updates annually. So, yeah, I mean, when you look at your resources, you have to look at that whole picture.
So our charge is...
And I'm sorry, but to me, this is where priorities really becomes a key thing, which is why, as you guys have sat there and you've seen me vote on some things,
so
I'm like, I don't care about fixing the parking lot. Let's get one of these steam classrooms up.
Mm-hmm.
So we have capital money we could be working with,
mm-hmm,
in addition to fund balances, and we have to, which I think is a meeting we need to have, is to determine if steam is a priority for us or not, and what does that mean? Maybe, you know, that's more important than the roof or whatever.
Well, that's where I was going with our charge. I think it's to have this next level conversation, which is, you know, based on then how does the board identify what those priorities are? What I think.
That you have a short term and a long term charge. Your short term charge is to, you know, value those short term projects,
mm-hmm,
against the larger priority of your facilities. And within that context, is the larger concept, the larger piece of facilities, is our first priority to move forward and define a plan, or is it within that plan a different kind of community engagement, you know, to get the pulse of the community?
And I see we already have a conflict, since we don't have any meetings. We don't have any meetings in July to make those to establish those priorities. We cannot stick to this timeline already, because this requires us in July to make some decisions that we won't be able to make since we don't have any meetings.
So we could schedule a meeting.
We could schedule a meeting. And I also...
schedule a workshop.
I think we have, to me, you know, we're presented short-term steam and long-term buildings.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, we could say, let's do one of the buildings steam, you know, and just let's get that done so at least we make progress.
Well, that's part
and the community will see what it is, and the community might say, this is great, or why did they spend all this money? You know, I mean, there's different ways to look at this. It doesn't have to be all or nothing. I mean, I would prefer that we do all the steam, but I don't know what the number is. Right.
Right. So it seems to me we have to review those packets, get
absolutely
a better understanding of the budget numbers associated with a lot of what was presented tonight. Mm-hmm. And then once we do that, if we need a July meeting, which we feel we do, then we have to vote on a July workshop. But not until I read that packet.
I mean, I think that's perfectly stated. We need to review this work that is the culmination of our going back to 2009 master facilities and looking at the current curriculum plan and the long-range plan for the district, and this reflects an updated view of it. There's some numbers attached.
I would add one piece of food for thought, not to have a discussion around this, but there was one takeaway at the meeting where we tabled the land, where representatives of Wheaton College were here. And what Dale Kemp did acknowledge, as we stated, as board members stated, I know that I did and others did as well, is that programs drive facilities. And he acknowledged that's exactly the way Wheaton College looks at their long-range plan and short-term plan as well. So in keeping that in mind, we have this 2014 date looming, and we know that we've committed our curriculum, as science rolls up, to moving in that direction. So, you know, I agree with what John's saying in terms of we want to be creative about how we look with it. There are some level setters in terms of our programs that also have to be, you know, we need to be reminded of, is what I'm saying.
Well, and I think, you know, obviously Karen's voice will be an important voice in that as we look at what the new science curriculum is going to look like and what the needs are going to be around that. Now, that's work that's going to unfold over the course of the year, so it's not work in outcomes you'll have in July.
Okay, so do we have a consensus that we should be taking a serious look at a July meeting? Is that something that we should do?
I think so.
Yeah. A later July meeting, probably.
I think you have to review. You have to do a thorough review.
We need to do our homework and
okay,
weigh in on
this. So that's I hear two yeses as to.
I'm in Spain most of the month of July, but
we can
meet you there.
So yeah, what happened in Spain?
So what happened in Spain?
Spain. Well, Spain
is that where the new IIS meeting is?
Are we spending the night in a hotel room?
Okay, I still only hear two. John's
but I don't need to be here if you guys, you know, decide on a date.
My July schedule's kind of filled, but I'm a yes, but a maybe, I guess. Okay.
I just prefer beginning of the week.
Well,
Mondays are probably a good, since you're already scheduled for Mondays, to think about a Monday date. You could even do the first week of August, do back-to-back, if you know, do three meetings in August. I think we've made some other, yes. Yeah, Paul's over there. What are you doing? One of the things that
feel free to object.
One of the things that I might suggest to you is that you do as Joe suggested, read the plan, and offer for Sam some dates that you would be available in July to meet, considering later in July is better for just your work, getting your work underway.
I would be in upstate New York for the first 2 weeks in August, but yeah, you guys can help me.
Well, then you'll have to type up all of your comments and send them to us.
Well, so what we can do then is we can all review our packets, and we can, if you would please, send suggested dates in July that you can be available. I guess we're going to try to land on a Monday. And then Paul and I can discuss the agenda and what days works best for us, and then we can go from there.
Well, if I'm in town too, I can come and answer your questions too.
Okay, so we will include you as and the information, and if you're around, we'd be happy to have you. That'd be great. Okay.
So that concludes this portion of the meeting, and board members, I know.
Listen.
We're getting ready to go into closed session, but we do have a member of the community who joined us late and wished, after public participation was already over, does wish to make some public participation.
Any objection?
No.
Thanks, Ron, by the way.
You can speak wherever you like, wherever you're comfortable.
Your reports.
Should we? So those
we're not even close.
Those are two different stacks. Is that what we need?
One on
one and two. Add to your library.
Good evening. I can see that you're all a very hardworking group of people, and after listening to many audio tapes, I know that you work well into the night.
I don't want to interrupt you, but we have to stick to the 3-minute schedule. So.
Sure, and I'll try to be as brief as I can.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Nicole Brisson. I'm here speaking solely on my behalf, not for my son who asked me not to speak, but as a mother of two children in District 41. A soon-to-be level 2 student as well as an 8th grader, I follow closely the controversy regarding Stephen Chbosky's book, The Perks of Being a Wallflower. Because I was concerned about this issue and unable to attend many of the board meetings where the matter was discussed, I listened to all the audio tapes of the board meetings beginning with April 29th and running through May 6th, 13th, 28th, and culminating with my attendance at the June 10th meeting. I wanted to hear word for word how this issue was playing out, sometimes listening into the wee hours of the morning when my house was most quiet and I could have time to think. I have several observations from those meetings. Number one, I feel as each of you readily know, our district unfortunately did not have a policy in place regarding supplemental reading materials in classroom libraries. As a result of this unforeseen problem, two concerned parents brought forth this matter to try to rectify the situation. I am not friends with them, by the way. I believe they had the best of intentions when they appeared before the board on April 29th. They were being responsible parents and trying to bring this crack in the policy to life. Not knowing how to handle the situation, I assume they advocated for the removal of the book, ensuring the children and other children, and presumably their younger children, wouldn't be exposed to such literature. It is my opinion their intention was to have a say in their child's education. They were following our District 41 slogan, "It's our future, own it," which includes all stakeholders, administrators, teachers, parents, and students. For their participation, by raising their voices and their daughter's voice for their choices, I ask, what did they get in return? They became the talk of the town. Their names were written up in local and city newspapers, and their actions were discussed on the radio, local TV, multiple board meetings, and scrutinized on various blogs and computer chat rooms, the latter often in a mocking and unfavorable light. They also endured the bullying of their daughter in the hallways of Hadley. I don't feel any child needs to have their locker adorned with post-it notes of flowers or have post-it notes with flowers lining the 8th grade hallway. Yes, the post-it note of a flower is meaningless, but in this context, it packed a punch. As I understand it, she was also verbally bullied, being called a tattletale, a snitch, etc. I don't condone verbal bullying, nor indirect bullying of any kind, nor do I think our district should. While I have no doubt the administration did its best to curtail such activities, I was troubled to hear that a friend of the bullied girl tried, in fact, to take some of the hallway post-it notes down, but was told by a teacher not to, saying instead that someone put these up and the administration needs to handle it. If these post-it notes had gender slurs, racial slurs, or religious slurs, I'm sure they would have been taken down immediately, as they should. At Hadley, each day our children start off with the Pledge of Allegiance and end with the Wildcat Way motto, be respectful, be responsible, and be safe. Building an environment based on those powerful words, our district usually gets it right. We comprise a great community of excellent, caring teachers, many of whom have taught my children, hardworking administrators, counselors, and informed and concerned parents. We are an amazing community of dedicated professionals and people. It pains me to say, however, with this matter and how it was handled, that our district got it wrong. I, too, don't have the answers. However, when a child and a family comes forward and is simply being honest and true to themselves, I think we cannot tolerate intolerance. I believe that was one of the main themes of the controversial book.
30 seconds.
Creating policy for a team of stakeholders, we must strive not to make someone a fall guy. While this process was unpleasant for many, I feel the Bradfield family took the biggest hit. And as a former English teacher, taxpayer, mom, and citizen of this community, I'm sad. Yes, a better policy is now in place due to this painful process. People have a more clear-cut say for and against what their children read in school, as they should. So is it as Shakespeare contemplated hundreds of years ago in this situation, all's well that ends well? Or as one 8th grader stated, the closer we are to something, the less we actually see. I urge the district, the next time we face difficult decisions, I hope we would take a pause before donning symbols of unity, such as freedom shirts, emblematic pins, the wearing or carrying of yellow flowers, or quoting from books in question at graduation ceremonies. Let's ask ourselves, are we really trying to create the unity we want, or ultimately division?
That's time. Could you please sum up?
J.R.R. Tolkien once mused, courage is found in unlikely places. I want to thank the Bradfields for coming forward and courageously taking one for the team when trying to bring to light a problem. I hope we can take the lessons learned from this experience and utilize them as we embark on our new districting tank initiative. I hope we really examine our policies well before we proceed. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nicole.
Okay. Adjourn to closed session. Board is determined as the need to adjourn to closed session to discuss the following matters. Collective negotiating matters between the district and its employees or their representatives, or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees, the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the district or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee or against legal counsel for the district to determine its validity. May I have a motion to adjourn to closed session?
Motion.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Chenwood, second by Mr. Ellis. Roll call, please.
Mr. Elker?
Yes.
Mr. Kuchanski?
Yes.
Mr. Chenwood?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Elante?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Yes. Mr. Black?
Yes. No action will be taken when the board returns to open session.
Thanks, everybody.